The following podcast contains mature language and spoilers. Listener discretion is advised.
After deciding to start a podcast and enlisting my two best friends to serve as co-hosts, there were still a lot of questions about the subject, format, and start date. We'd all agreed to do a Marvel-themed show to both reflect our interests and as a contrast to the majority of DC shows amidst our circles. We blew a start date to coincide with the release of Captain America: The Winter Soldier, but I'd gotten us started on reading the Annihilation event series in anticipation of Guardians of the Galaxy. I still had hopes for a July 4th launch involving Cap, but most of what we had in the can were anecdotes and space stuff. Guardians release came up fast, but we managed to launch a few weeks ahead of it. That means the summer of 2019 marked the 5th anniversary of Rolled Spine Podcast. Over that time, we recorded hours of material that has not or will not ever be heard by our listeners. Some of it is too controversial, some too problematic, and a lot of it is just lame. However, both as a byproduct of my focusing on other projects and a genuine desire to push out some of that backlog, we spent a lot of time with nostalgic archival material the last few months. Given that the Marvel Superheroes Podcasts are our first and longest running show, that the Marvel Cinematic Universe that helped inspire and guide it has reached its 22-film endgame, and that projects in the works from the very beginning are finally coming to fruition for Marvel's 80th anniversary, I thought it might be nice to look at a few abortive efforts on the eve of our podcasting centennial. In 2015, the Irredeemable Shag decided to use various work trips to meet his podcasting buddies in person. I personally didn't feel like I was worth a four-hour drive from Dallas to spend about half that time together, but Shag disagreed. Since pictures were expected, I went to a costume store and quickly grabbed masks and other accessories for myself and Illegal Machine. Knowing Shag was on his way, I sat out on my front porch wearing a grinning, reflective red metallic mask with curved devil horns, texting Shag ominous messages to heighten the mood. Let me tell you, it's weird to meet someone in person after knowing them from message boards and the occasional podcast guest appearance. I've been in odder circumstances, but it still took Shag and I a while to loosen up and relate like normal people. Then Max showed up, and we had to build up pretty much from scratch to address the new dynamics of a trio. Paquita served up shepherd's pie, and we finally seemed on track again with our bellies full. Shag revealed plans for a fire and water podcasting network, and insisted we record a special episode of his show to commemorate our meeting. We had at best an hour left before Shag had to go, and I felt like recording was just another obstacle in our simply enjoying one another's company. Still, we started recording, and then Fix It showed up to blow it all to hell again. I sent an MP3 to Shag that sanded down some of the rougher edges, but I knew this was never going to be an episode of Fire and Water. The truth is, it was more like oil and water without the essential spark. There are simply fundamental differences in our approaches that are laid bare in this recording. At Fan Expo Boston this year, Shag was telling folks about this chaotic recording and how I'd supposedly forbade him from ever running it. I never did anything of the sort. I simply pointed out that it wasn't Fire and Water Podcasting Network material. Rolled Spine Podcast, however, has no such standards. Presented here is the abortive episode I sent to Shag, sans a few of the worst elements, levelated with silence truncated to negative 25 decibels and 0.15 seconds, but otherwise unvarnished.
Welcome to Marvel Superheroes Podcast.
I think we should do both.
We're not gonna, dude.
We can do 30 minutes of me, 30 minutes of you.
I don't know, man. The thing with the retail reminiscing is I think that would be an easy 90 minutes between the three of us.
That would be a very long time. But it's good, though. That's a good one.
It is a good one. It's his idea.
We'll start remembering some really crazy stories.
But we can do that on the internet.
Okay, you know when you talk to him, you don't have to lean in. He's right here. We're not recording yet.
No, we are recording right now, actually.
We are recording right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I've got it started. Yeah.
Okay, so what about my levels? Do I need to be here? Do I need to be up in this shit? Do I need to be here?
Well, thankfully, there's this dude I know on the internet who told me about this shit called Levelator, and it makes an enormous difference.
Apparently, there's something better.
Oh, yeah?
I was just told the other day about something better. I got to find out the name of it. Not only does it do all this shit for you, it then FTPs it to your site and does a bunch of other stuff.
I don't want to relinquish that degree of control.
I don't want to do either, but I want to know what this site is because Levelator hasn't been updated in like 5 years.
You can tell it's old.
Yeah.
You can tell it's old.
But sound still works the same.
It's okay.
Sound, no, I mean, but look, you got to understand. I was going through our podcast. Huh?
Doesn't always do good things for me.
Okay, pardon me. Let me put it to you this way.
We're not using this audio.
Goddamn.
Yeah, I know, but it's forced habit at this point.
But you're still leaning into the mic to say.
I know, but it's force of habit. I always go. That's why I have a condom on it, because that's what I do.
Okay.
Anyway, when we were starting the podcast, I was going through and adjusting the levels manually, you know, line by line.
Right.
So for me, it was a godsend. It made a huge difference. So once I find something that works, I really hate to let go of, you know, or change it. So
I get this email from this douchebag I know, right? And it says,
"Oh yeah, your levels suck."
Okay. I get this email from this D-bag I know, and he's like, "Hey man, I'm thinking about starting a podcast." Or no, I'm sorry.
There we go.
I'll start that over. Okay. So I get this email from this D-bag, and he says to me, "Hey, I had this friend in Canada who's getting ready to start a podcast. What can you tell me?" And I really thought you had a friend in Canada starting a podcast, like Siskoid or somebody, and it was you.
Dude.
You're a fucking stone cold busted. I know you're going to try and use some
Hold on, your levels are really out of whack. Okay.
I was going to use that too, bitch.
What were we going to use? What were we talking about?
Whatever we were talking about.
Oh, well, for starters, he should know what I was doing because I stole that bit from News Radio.
Okay.
Because Matthew had the girlfriend from Canada. You don't know her?
Well, the joke.
The whole joke.
Matthew, no, that goes back to Breakfast Club, you idiot.
Oh, does it?
Yes.
Oh, is that?
No, wait, it goes back even further. Doesn't it go back to Weird Science?
It might. Well, no, Weird Science came after Breakfast Club.
Okay,
dude.
So it goes back to Breakfast Club.
Okay. So
anyway. And he's like, oh, yeah.
You're right. No, it wasn't that one.
Get used to saying that.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is I was doing the joke. I thought you were going to get the joke. I can't help it if you were just being obtuse and didn't catch on. I have a friend in Canada who wants to start a podcast, and you bought that?
Well,
Jesus Christ, dude.
You actually had a friend in Canada.
Right. We have a friend named Siskoid who lives in Canada.
Okay, I didn't make that association at that time. Matter of fact, I'm not even sure if I was friendly with Scipio.
Scipio Tone? Is that his name?
No, there's actually a blogger named Scipio, too. Scipio Garling. He does the Absorbicast. Okay. So, wait, no, Siskoid. I knew Siskoid, and I'd done some crossover stuff with him, but I really didn't start, like, engaging with him until I got on Twitter. So that was before I was even on Twitter, I think.
You know, he's on Facebook.
Yeah, good for him. I'm not. I'm not going
to
be either.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Fire and Water Podcast, the official podcast of FirestormFan.com and AquamanShrine.com. I'm one of your co-hosts, the Irredeemable Shag. And with me, as always, Rob's not here. He's in the basement like a gimp, because I'm sitting here with Diabolo Frank, an illegal machine from the Marvel Superheroes podcast, a show you may have heard of but hasn't produced a new episode in like 10 years. Say hello to the people at home.
I don't know where to go with that.
Well, they've all heard you before, Frank.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Fire and Water Podcast. I'm a legal machine, and with me is...
Diabolo Frank. Yeah, well, you're usually the guy who sends us in, so it's kind of our dynamics all jacked up.
It's a habit.
Well, see, either the people at home have heard of you guys, because they've listened to your, quite frankly, rip-off terrible show, or they've heard of Frank, and they don't know who the hell you are, legal machine. So for the people at home, tell us why you matter in the comic book world, machine, or Mac. We're supposed to call him Mac.
You can call me Mac, well, because it's less syllables.
Like mac and cheese.
It's less syllable. Oh, hey.
Yeah.
Hey.
Cheesy.
Hey, I'm all about the mac and cheese.
Why do I matter in the comic book universe? I have no idea.
Then why in the hell are you here?
I'm here for Diabolo Frank to talk to and not sound like a complete lunatic.
So you're the straight man. You're like Darren Stevens to Samantha. That makes him Samantha?
He would... Diabolo Frank would disagree, but yes, that's what it is.
Of course he would disagree. That goes to his nature. Sure. All he is contrary to everything.
That's what he does.
This is the longest Frank has been quiet in like 3 years.
I'm just not feeling it.
Whatever.
I'm not feeling it. I don't know.
Well, Frank, why don't you tell the folks at home why we've gathered together? By the way, I am sitting here face to face with these gentlemen. This isn't like a Skype thing.
Well, mask to face.
Well, there's a reason Frank's wearing the mask. You guys have seen like the Deadpool trailer or read the Deadpool comics. You know how he's like horribly disfigured? You know, like an avocado had sex with an older avocado. That's what Frank actually looks like. Now I understand why he's so secretive on the internet. Mac just looks like a dude.
I'm extremely pedestrian.
Right. I think I saw him in Target last week. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of that guy. But
I don't think a day goes by that my girlfriend doesn't point at a random white person and go, "Is that Mac?" No, he's not.
In fact, one of our other co-hosts, Mr. Fixit, who is not here, once walked up behind somebody in a Walgreens and said, "Hey, man, you ready to go?" And realized that he was talking to another random white guy. And I was standing by the door going, Dude.
I like how we just glazed completely over the bald-faced lie that Frank said about having a girlfriend. That was clever. Yeah. Just zipped it right in and went right to the other
person. Well, now that we know, you're spoiling identities already,
I'm
man.
Just
it's
saying.
Ridiculous.
We all know. We all know he lives in his parents' basement. Hey, that's where I am right now.
As long as I have an air compressor, I've got a girlfriend.
Whoa! On that note, Frank, why don't you tell the folks at home why we're here?
because you showed up at my house and I didn't have a choice in the matter?
For God's sakes, just tell them what we're going to talk about.
I forgot what we're going to talk about. We're going to hash on each other? We're going to make fun of each other's characters? Is that what we're going to do?
No. The three of us have one thing in common besides being boring nerds.
I thought we decided we weren't going to do the retail one.
I'm pretty sure about 30 seconds before we started recording, you said, no, that would make a better topic. This one, the one that we're
supposed to do. No, I said it would make a better topic for a longer episode. We have more time to record. But I was saying we should wait and do that one when we have the time to really get into it.
Mac, which did you think we were doing?
I'm thoroughly confused now, and now I'm not sure.
I'm confused as hell. And now if I leave this stuff in, for those of you at home, if I've chosen to leave this part of the show in, this is what Frank's show sounds like. It's a whole lot of like, what? What are we doing? I don't know. Ah, it's a show. We're keep going. Oh, look. Fix is asleep. Oh! That's kind of that. Some Marvel superheroes in like
and
4 seconds.
That's after it's been edited for 7 weeks.
Yeah, I know. Okay. So we're going to bash on each other's characters?
I don't know. I really never have had the plot of this, much less being able to lose it. I can't lose it if I've never had it in the first place.
Okay, well, here. I don't know any of these fucking characters. So...
It's a kid's show. What are you doing?
So what is
I don't
your,
know any
what is
of
your,
these gosh darn characters.
I don't know any of these gosh darn characters. Jiminy Crickets, why don't you tell me about that Flim Flam Martian Manhunter?
Martian Manhunter. Let me tell you, he's a joke. First of all, when the Justice League was, you know, around originally in the 60s, right? Who's the first Justice League member they kicked out? Oh, that was being Martian Manhunter because no one gave a crap.
Is that for real?
Yeah, totally.
No, actually, Wonder Woman quit before Martian Manhunter was officially kicked out.
And Wonder Woman came back 5 minutes later?
No, she's gone for a while. That's when she was depowered and was running around in the white jumpsuit.
Yeah, okay.
Know your history before you start talking
how
smack.
How long until she came back?
A few years, actually.
Okay, and how long did Martian Manhunter come back?
About 13 years.
Okay, there we go. Thank you. And prior to the Justice League Unlimited cartoon, walk up to anyone, any kid on the street, and go, hey, who are these guys from the Super Friends? That one. Oh, who's that green guy in the end? Oh, nobody knows who Martian Manhunter is.
They totally know. It's the Hulk. Bald Hulk.
True. And his
trust me, I sold that figure. The kid goes to the comic shop. He points and he's going, Batman and the Incredible Hulk. And he's pointing at Black Panther and Martian Manhunter.
And he, you used to work in a comic shop? That might be something interesting to talk about. But anyway, Martian Manhunter.
Well, we can do that too. We'll switch gears again.
Martian Manhunter is quite possibly the most boring DC character ever made. They've tried to launch his series a million times. Nothing interesting about the guy. I've spent the afternoon going through Frank's personal diary. I have discovered that he has the worst rogues gallery of any superhero ever. Name off some of his rogues that he showed me today. Come on.
I'm not feeling
go.
It, guys.
Go.
We
need like a third option.
No, this is like, I realize that this is not going to go well for me, so I'm backing out. Come on.
No. I mean, I like the Martian Manhunter rogues gallery. You've got Commander Blanks, who's basically like General Zod, admittedly.
Okay.
You've got Belle Juz, who is a traitorous woman with green skin and lavender hair, who tried to enslave all the Martians to get herself out of slavery to this group called the Thivens, who had these giant robo charges like
Mad
Max.
Naming people.
And then
get to the good ones.
Then there's Decay Draz, who was a serial killer who tried to procreate with Martian Manhunter in Brightest Day. Marshal, who was a warlord genetically engineered to be the perfect Martian, who led the invasion of Earth that led to the disbanding of the Justice League of America.
Did I ask for their Who's Who entries? I don't think I did. I just said name the characters.
Okay.
What about the squirrel?
The human squirrel. Let's go there.
Okay, sure. The human squirrel was actually a reformed criminal. There was part of the ex-criminals club
again.
That Martian Manhunter was working with, and he was actually not appearing in an actual story. Somebody had ripped off his identity and was trying to frame him, and that's the story is about this guy who had gotten friendly with John Jones being framed.
What about the water hand of
Diablo? Yeah, the water hand.
Oh, sure, yeah. There was the idol head opened up a hole in the sky that sucked Martian Manhunter and Zook into an alien world where there were all sorts of monsters they fought for a few pounds apiece. One was a giant watery hand, and another was like a giant rhinoceros that could shoot its horns at people.
Please note, he mentioned Zook right there.
Yeah, Zook. Zook is another dimensional imp, not unlike
that
the
nobody remembers.
Like Batmite or Mr. Mixia Spitalik, who could elongate, he could heat and cold objects, his antennas could track people. He's a lot more useful than, Firestorm never bothered to have a supporting cast member. He's got the Zook. Old man in his head.
That's not true.
Now, hold on. Wait. No. We're focusing on Martian Manhunter. You guys will have your chance to take pot shots at me in a minute.
I'm not taking pot shots. I was going to correct the man. I apologize.
That's okay. Well, you can talk about Firestorm in a minute. I promise.
Okay,
so I'm just trying to think. I mean, there was like 15 sketchbooks full of embarrassing characters. There's more. Come on.
There's all kinds of cool, imaginative, unique characters that artists get excited about drawing so they don't have to draw another Batman, Firestorm, Aquaman, you know, one of those kind of lamos that everybody likes and it's kind of boring to be a fan of. Yeah. I like to choose people that have interesting, obscure, you know, something where you have to do a little bit of digging, something where you got to find the diamonds in the rough. And just imaginative. I mean, how many times can you repeat, say, Black Manta? Who the hell are Firestorm's villains again? Okay. I forgot entirely.
That would be the cast of The Flash. That's who they are. But anyway, the popular TV show.
You mean the guys that were cheap enough to produce that they threw them on the first season?
Possibly, yes. But it doesn't matter.
Hey, look, if the guy who multiplies himself will just have the same actor appear over and over again.
Hey, do you remember when Winchester from MASH colored himself green and played Martian Manhunter?
Yeah, they never put that on television. They knew better. Yeah. Plus, he was still Winchester from MASH, not that guy from The Duff.
I'm just saying. And I love how it's clearly obvious that you were like on the debate team because you're debating shit, okay?
Hey, you're not supposed to curse on this show.
I'm aware of that.
There are kids listening.
There's crap coming out of your mouth, but you're sure making it sound good. You're like spicing it up with stuff, but it's still crap. Come on, give me some more. Just run through.
Okay, well, how about the Who's Who entries?
Sure. Give me some names.
Well, how about Phil Morris, the noted character actor played – what was the character in Seinfeld? My name just escaped me. The Johnny Cochran riff.
I wish you guys could see Max's eyes right now.
Jackie Childs.
So Jackie Childs, who is the son of the guy from Mission Impossible, by the way, that bad brother. And he was himself on Mission Impossible, then went on to the Smallville TV show and was the coolest character who was constantly having to say Superman. So yeah, Phil Morris was a terrible actor in an awful TV show. He just was in the best thing in that series for the most part. He was so damn cool. He himself said that he was Shaft from outer space. That is okay. So much cooler than fucking, oops, sorry. That's so much cooler than The Flash. Well, I'm not saying The Flash show is better than Smallville. I'll give you that.
The Flash show is the most watched show on CW ever in its entire history.
I love how the most watched television show on the CW.
No, that's...
Is that even actually a
network? Kind of a ridiculous way to put the popular.
I'm just telling you.
That's more like a programming block than a network.
That was their term. So I meant for you not to run through the actors. I'd like you to finish running through the villains.
Plus, Ange and I have the pet theory that Commander Blank's going to turn up on Supergirl. We've really got our fingers crossed for that. He's very excited about the prospect.
Yeah, him and Reactron. That'll be awesome. Can't wait.
Hey, Supergirl's going to be cool. I can't wait to see that show.
It's going
to
be a fun show for one season. I can't wait.
You've got a great-looking costume, a great actress, very positive show. Dude. CBS seems to be really behind it. I'm looking forward to that actual network television show featuring a character that people know about and haven't enjoyed for decades. Not something that they just heard about like a year ago.
It is going to be an incredible show, and she is going to be absolutely wonderful and perfect for one season, and then CBS is going to kill it.
You think it's going to go with the Flash route?
Not Flash. Constantine. That's what you meant to
say. Well, no. Do you remember the CBS Flash show?
Because we were just talking about the other Flash.
Yeah, I think if Gotham's going to have a hard time lasting more than a couple seasons, I don't know how.
Well, my understanding is Gotham's Supergirl. A terrible show, though. That's part of the problem, I'm sure.
A lot of people don't agree, believe it or not.
People like Gotham?
Yeah,
I've never seen it. I only know it by reputation.
Mr. Fix It.
Yeah, but yeah, he's okay.
We got to talk about that later.
Okay. My people don't care about that.
Sorry, I know.
Anyway,
sorry. What were we talking about?
Flash.
Name some more.
Oh, okay. So Supergirl on CBS.
Mm-hmm.
Constantine, right? And you at home can see my hand gestures. Constantine, CBS, one season got canceled. Flash, most watched show on CW. They can't stop cheerleading it, right? Reality is Constantine had more viewers than Flash, even though it got canceled. Supergirl then, therefore, will get as many as Flash. Right? Uh-oh. If they don't bust out the numbers and do huge, huge, huge numbers, CBS is going to kill it because it's not selling enough diapers.
But that's the problem is that it's sort of an apples to oranges comparison. The general public doesn't really know who Flash is. Everybody knows who Supergirl is because everybody knows who Superman is. Sure. And it's on a CBS. It's heavily promoted. Look at NCIS New Orleans has done very well. Who among our people watches that stuff? I think that Supergirl is the kind of show that will not only get the nerds, but it'll also get the CBS audience.
I think you could do
quite well. And the thing with Constantine that I've heard oft times is the problem with that show is that it was already called Supernatural on CW prior. The time period in which you had to make a Constantine show of that nature was before all the other shows that are in syndication now that have been on for years and years. Constantine was just too late. Everybody had already stolen what made him an interesting character.
Plus,
he was on NBC, and NBC is not exactly a hot network these days.
I blame Keanu Reeves for spoiling that pot.
People like that movie, though. That was not a good movie.
I
want to slap my forearms together real quick. So,
well, I don't want to. I don't. That was a visual. I didn't need to see. And I don't want anyone to misinterpret. I'm actually very excited about the Supergirl series. I'm just afraid it's going to get cut. So.
I think it looks terrible.
Please,
you think the show looks terrible?
Okay, I think it looks absolutely awful.
You're wrong. That's okay.
It looks like a bad bad CW show they're trying to put on CBS, and it's not going to fly. And I think it's going to be so female driven that even the guys that do watch it won't really want to tell people they watch it because I think they're going to go way too far. They're going to try way too hard to cater to the female audience. audience, and they're going to alienate a lot of male viewers.
Unfortunately.
And I think the opposite is true. I think they're just going to have a large female following that'll be stronger than on CW shows.
I don't think so. Well, I think it'll start out, and then it's gonna burn fast.
The people I like are talking the way Frank is talking, but I've heard a lot of people talking the way you're talking, Mac, which scares me. So those are like more normal people, not like us. And again, you look like a normal guy.
I have more of a gateway to normal people, so I apologize. But that
we should call you Gateway. That should be your new name.
No.
Like the X-Men guy?
Yeah. Was that an X-Men guy?
Yeah, the guy with the bull roar that teleported him everywhere.
You can't see both Frank and I are doing bolos.
Yeah, you guys literally both listen. You both start doing
it. It's raining.
What's that dance?
Hallelujah. Yeah,
like, the Cotton Eye Joe or some shit.
Oh, dear God.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
He's the aboriginal boom tube of the Marvel Universe.
During
an aboriginal boom tube?
Yeah. During the end of Claremont's run. All right, so continue, please, with these really lame Martian Manhunter villains without the Who's Who entry.
This is what I want to talk about. Here's what I don't understand about Diablo Frank, and I've known Diablo Frank for near on two decades.
I'm so sorry.
How do you
My condolences.
Have so much passion about a character you obviously hate so much?
Why do I hate the character so
because
much?
Because every one of your podcasts is nothing but telling everybody how much you hate this and that and this. Let me tell you about the last 40 years of the Martian Manhunter, how much I hate it and everything about it and all the characters that came out of it.
Well, no, I think that the character, it's just like with Wonder Woman. Very few people who are Wonder Woman fans are fans of Wonder Woman comic books. They're a fan of the character because they see that
and Brian Bolland covers.
Brian Bolland covers or Adam Hughes covers. They love the icon of Wonder Woman. They love specific runs or specific shows. Tons of people who are into Wonder Woman are into the television series that Linda Carter was on.
Yeah, exactly. Masturbated to her a lot. Don't act like you did.
I was a little young for Linda Carter. Anyway, I'm not old like some of the people here.
Reruns.
I was more of a Buck Rogers guy. Wilma Deering was my gal.
Dude, anyhow, Wilma Deering made me a man. I will tell you about her later. She is still hot.
She is still hot. I saw her at San Diego in 2000.
That was 15 years ago.
God damn, I'm old too.
I saw her a few weeks ago. She's still hot.
Okay. Anyway, so you're a fan of the stuff that you like, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the execution of the stuff you like is on target. What I've said, and you've listened to my podcast, what I often point out to you is that...
Unfortunately.
It's a great sleep aid.
Yeah. Post-crisis, when J.M. DeMatteis revised that character...
You mean J.M. DeMatteis?
It's not the correct pronunciation.
It is! What the fuck? Who did you interview in your own podcast and he said it right?
We'll get to that. The second half of the Martian Manhunter 60th Anniversary podcast will feature J.M. DeMatteis saying his own name. Anyway.
Oh, good Lord.
Hey, Mr. Fix-It.
Hey. I am Shad. Nice to meet you.
You'll recognize the voice.
I hear you want to kick my ass because I'm... Yeah. That's my toy. Frank and I... He's only like,
he's been marked.
Those are my people picking on me because I'm his friend. No, it's because you're his bitch.
Okay, I left that out.
That is awesome. Nice to meet you, man.
Yeah, pleasure meeting you, bro.
All right, man.
I like the fear of his eyes. I was like, who's this large Mexican coming through?
I saw the shadow go by the blinds. I'm like, somebody's here. Oh, I think Fix-It's here.
Well, no, it was funny because I was driving and your neighbors, I'm like, I drive the way I drive.
Well, I kind of said long to begin with because I was out there with a satanic mask.
It's a long story.
Yeah, it was awesome.
None of which will surprise you, but.
Cool.
Is there any need?
Sorry. Bye. Cool. Y'all go ahead and finish up.
You don't want to participate, I take it.
This is our eclectic cast of characters.
This will all get it out. This isn't Marvel Super Heroes. We edit this stuff out. You guys just let it run.
This is the crew.
This reminds me of the way your shows go. It's like there's a guy named Trentus Magnus. He recorded a show where he's like, I need a smoke. And he just went outside and smoked a cigarette and left it recording and came back and left all that in.
I don't get how people can do that.
It was for a gag.
But you've listened to some of these podcasts where that's it. There's no editing. I'm like, you gotta have some editing. Like,
well, Frank edits too much. I mean, the three of us have talked about this before.
We've talked about it. So I'm like, dude, and he kills himself over it too. He kills himself editing this stuff. And he's like, no. I like the pace that he gives. I'm like, dude,
it's super.
It sounds like a soundboard. It sounds like you've pieced together a soundboard of us, and it's terrible.
We don't have to talk about it anymore. Yeah. There's a great program called Audacity, and it has a feature called Truncate Silence, which I didn't know about until about a year ago.
Does he know about Truncate Silence?
I think I told him about it. He goes, I like my system. But what it does is it looks for silences and shortens them. So if there's a gap when you're thinking, or another, it just cuts it down, and it sounds natural as hell.
Wow.
Like, Frank and I did an episode. We did a Blue Devil episode that I felt like I'd edited pretty nicely. And it was 50 minutes. And then I ran it through Trunkhead Silence. It took out 2 more minutes of pauses.
Whoa. Wait, I mean, I use Audacity.
Which you refuse to use.
Well, I like my style. I have my own system.
Oh, no, that's not true. What happened was, you mentioned Trunkhead Silence. I was like, yeah, I've seen it on there. And you're like, I'll walk you through it. It's like, fuck that shit. I'll work through it myself. And I worked it out. It's like, hey, okay, that's pretty cool. I'll use it from now on, and like virtually ever since.
Oh, you've been using it?
I've used it on almost every show, yeah.
It's fantastic.
It's a lot easier than you know.
Yep.
Well, the problem, though, is it probably works a little better for you guys than for us, because the way I talk without pauses, without enough pauses, can be pretty intense.
Well, do you want to, like, I can give you the recommended settings that came from the
I play with the settings depending on what I want to do with it.
But you're sound like shit, so I'm just saying. You want,
please take help.
Fuck off. See, you're supposed to be on my side. Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're.
Please take help.
We'll finish Diablo, and then we'll turn it on me if you guys.
Okay,
want,
sure.
But then we got to go after Iron Man too.
But no, it's like different shows. I use different settings. Have you noticed the Idlehead of Diablo podcast is much slower paced comparatively than a lot of the other ones?
I thought that was the content.
Hadn't noticed that.
Yeah, it tends to be. That show, it's intentionally slower paced because I go about my whole process with that show is differently. Where if you listen to the Atom podcast, Power of the Atom, that show gets boom, 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 and then you're done. You're in and out of there so quick.
What is this Power of the Atom podcast?
You've listened to that one.
What show is this?
It's another stream.
Wait, let me think. I seem to recall back in June, maybe it was May, there was a show called that, but now it's, we're in October now. There's no show called that anymore.
Well, see, as I was pointing out, my love of the Martian Manhunter was so great that I allowed all the other shows to go black.
7 minutes of your life. It's a 7-minute show.
But it takes about an hour 30? Or two to edit those 7 minutes, though.
Yeah, you spent time watching Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah. Well, the other problem, too, is honestly, you want to know the honest truth? One of the major reasons why those shows haven't come out recently, I was trying to do a convergence where I was going to cover all the convergence stuff.
Yeah, I know. You invited me to that. I remember. Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, I was going to do it myself, and I have recorded parts of it, and then it kind of...
No one gives a shit about convergence.
I know, nobody gives a shit about convergence. So it's like, so that's all out a lot of those shows, trying to finish off that. Okay. I can't say, though, the Detroit one was good.
I love how he's still talking into the microphone. It cracks me up.
I always talk into the microphone.
But we're having a conversation.
Are we? I don't know what's...
Again, this is the kind of shit you'd use in your show. This is all getting cut.
This is the kind of shit he would use in our show.
This is just friends talking. This is different.
Okay. So, yeah. So, anyway, so that's what happened with that.
What was the last thing we put him to the screws
at?
Okay, so anyway, so as I was saying...
Oh, no, yeah, you're explaining why...
Well, start the bit over, because it's got interrupted.
No, it's okay. So, when J.M. DeMatteis was tasked with revising the character back in 1988, whether intentional or not, his run involved taking the Manhunter's universe, which was full of characters that nobody had paid attention to in years because his series had ended in 68, and shrinking it down to basically just John Jones and his family, and which were unnamed. His wife was unnamed, his child was unnamed. You just knew that they existed and they had died, and that the trauma of losing his people was so great that it kind of snapped Manhunter's mind and caused him to have the fantasy of the Silver Age stories, because that's how they went about writing those out, that there was a delusion that was placed in his mind by Saul Erdell.
It's kind of cool.
Right. So what happened is that as a solitary figure, this lonely, isolated figure, the last of the Martians, who also happens to have an extremely common weakness, but it's more a psychosomatic weakness than an actual physiological one. So instead of it being a goofy comic book thing, it was something about the deep psychology of the character. But whether it was intentional or not, DeMatteis essentially made the Martian Manhunter into the Mort Weisinger Silver Age Superman. This guy who's the only one of his kind left, who cannot relate to anybody else in the world, that with his lifespan of hundreds if not thousands of years, he's dealing with essentially children that he cannot interact with as an adult because they're just not on his level. But he's trying his best to protect this world of children that wants to kill themselves and everybody around them. And so that isolation, that loneliness, that deep pain of having lost everything, and the only thing that he has to keep him going is to try to do good for these other people until he dies, because he can't go off and kill himself. He's just got to wait until Roland Mir decides that his time is up. So in that meantime, he's going to go off and do the best he can for these people that are not his people, these children that he could see such promise in but can't relate to on his own level, because he's so much more intelligent, so much more experienced than they could ever be. And that was an aspect of Superman that made that character so wonderful. I'm sure if you ask Mark Waid, that's a huge part of his love for the Superman character, and a huge reason why DC won't let him write Superman, because that's the Superman he wants to write, and DC insists on sticking with the John Byrne paradigm, where he's a Boy Scout, he's a football hero, his parents are still alive, and he goes to have apple pie with them, you know, whenever he has the slightest life decision, and he married the hot, super intelligent reporter, and they relate to each other perfectly because he's totally a human, and Clark Kent is the real person, and Superman is the mask, and that is so different from the Superman that existed under Mort Weisinger, who, by the way, is, I believe at this point, the uncredited creator of the Martian Manhunter. It may be the only thing he ever did create that he could consider his own. I think that Sam Richardson helped develop it, and obviously Serta was the artist, but I was just reading an article with the editor, George Cashton, and even Cashton, who would readily acknowledge that Mort Weisinger was always stealing left, right, and center, said, but I think that's him because it's so much like Superman. So you could take the love that you might have had for the pre-Crisis Superman, and you can invest that into the Martian Manhunter because they're very similar in that core essence of what defines the characters. So yeah, maybe the Martian Manhunter's adventures haven't been great, but that essence, that sense of who this character is supposed to be, and the character as he was presented by DeMatteis, where he's the straight man amongst the Justice League, where again, he's like the daddy figure who's trying to wrestle all these kids in, and he still smirks and eats his cookies as well, because he's not such a stiff like Batman. That's the character that I love. And unfortunately, like right now, the current Martian Manhunter run, it's a pretty good comic book. If you can just go into it without any sort of emotional baggage, you haven't read it, so you can't say.
I've heard your reviews.
Okay, you've heard my reviews, but that's filtered through a fan's perspective.
And sadly, you like it and hearing your reviews.
Well, I like it more unlikable in the third and fourth issues that I haven't released podcasts on yet. The art is exceptional, and the story is interesting. You know, spoiler, he's basically doing Identity, if you remember that movie. What it turns out is that all these supporting characters that have been overwhelming the book for the previous issues, they're all the Martian Manhunter being split into different identities to keep him from forming into a Voltron-like super weapon that the Martians are going to use to take over the world. Now, I don't like that aspect of it, but if you're going to do something like that, it's probably the best possible way to write a story that I'm not that into. But the characters, the new characters are interesting. They do represent aspects of the Martian Manhunter and the various interpretations that writers have brought to that character. So once again, I can see what he's doing, and there are aspects of each one of these characters I like because I like that core of the character. It's just so few writers capture that. There's a handful of books that I can point to where it's like, yeah, that's a great Martian Manhunter story. American Secrets is a great Martian Manhunter story. The Man Who Was Who I Never Was from one of the Justice League Dash annuals is a great story. Several of the Ostrander stories were really good. It's just a lot of that other stuff didn't work for me. And one thing that Robbie Morrison is doing very well is that I hated that Ostrander decided he wanted to play with duality in his series, which every superhero comic book deals in because you're the hero or you're the normal person. Where that makes no sense for Martian Manhunter. He's a shapeshifter. You should deal with multiplicity. And that's what this series has been doing. It's dealing with the Martian Manhunter is like David Bowie, which I remember reading an article in the Hollywood Reporter years ago where David Bowie, at the time, 1960s, where everybody was like, you know, be who you are, you know, find the inner you. And Bowie, in his many identities, asked, well, which you? Everybody has a variety of identities that are part of who they are, that depending on who sees them, what facet of that personality that you're seeing. And it's writ large in the new Martian Manhunter series. So that's one thing that Rob Morrison is getting right. Sorry, Rob Williams is getting right.
Pick any name you want.
Right. That John Ostrander didn't.
So first,
hey, to reference Breakfast Club again, you mess with the bull, you get the horns.
So first off, I'd like to thank Frank for that filibuster.
So I just want you to know. So I'm sure I've never. I don't even. What was your podcast? Anyway, it doesn't matter. from what I understand, you probably have a comment section,
right?
I'm assuming that was the live version of what his.
You
comments
know that is
are?
Very. You know that's a good. That's a very insightful observation. That is very much like a reading from the comment section of our website.
Because you notice that even when he talks, there aren't like paragraph breaks.
No,
really no punctuation at all.
He actually, that was all one breath. Believe it or not, folks, just one breath.
He's got that Yanni where he can breathe through his nose while he talks through his mouth. It's the same kind of thing.
But I thought that was Kenny G.
The thing,
who cares? It's the same guy.
I'm loving that I'm in the same league.
And they're all
Yanni.
The Martian men.
Right. Well, I would like to, they are. I would like to bring it all back and sort of summarize what he just said, which is he likes a version of the character that's never existed in the comics.
So he has existed in the comics. It's just that...
Stop talking now.
Stop. Yeah, you had your piece.
Yes. So essentially, he likes all this stuff about Martian Manhunter that's just in his head, all by himself, and has never really been on the page, except for maybe one miniseries that everyone has disavowed. So that's pretty much who you are. So I got it. Good. Thank you. You're done. All right.
Please don't cry. I thought I saw your chin quiver for a second.
A little bit. Should we talk about Iron Man for a minute, Mac?
Okay, we can talk about Iron Man.
So,
what do you want to talk about? The most popular character in the Marvel Universe.
Is he the most popular character in the Marvel
Universe? Absolutely, he's the most popular character in the Marvel Universe.
More than Wolverine.
And you're about to see on October 31st when 1,000 Iron Men come to your door and want candy.
No, those are Deadpools. I know they both wear red. It gets confusing.
Maybe next year you might. Yeah. No, it's going to be the weird like 15 to 17-year-olds that shouldn't be out trick-or-treating anymore, but they just want to get together with their friends. They'll be wearing the Deadpool.
Money on the table right now, next Halloween, all Deadpools and Harlequins, and at conventions.
I was at a Halloween store last night.
Oh, at conventions already.
Getting my mask together, and that place was full of male and female Captain America costumes. I just want to mention that. It's just so much blue. So many people are into Captain America right now. So
you know what? I on the plane, coming out to this godforsaken state, I watched...
Said the man who comes from Florida.
Let's not throw stones.
I live in a glass house.
It might take out the wheel of your house. Right. Yeah.
I love that. Yes, thank you. I thought we weren't sharing secrets. Anyway, so, by the way, Frank's house, I'm in a basement. I'm not kidding. The windows are blacked out. They've got tinfoil on the outside, I guess, to reflect the light back out. I don't even want to tell you what his parents are like upstairs.
In Texas, we're not allowed to
spoiler,
just bury...
Spoiler, not living.
In Texas, we're not allowed to just bury the bodies. You have to put cement down to keep them from floating up. But
the scary thing is
basement.
Frank spent about 10 minutes telling me that on the phone on the way here. So, no kidding. Not lying. Anyway, so... Captain America. So, I watched Winter Soldier.
Well, no, we were talking about Iron Man, actually, but okay.
But let's talk about a more interesting character. So Winter Soldier, I watched it again on the plane coming out here. Up there with Guardians of the Galaxy, it's one of my favorite Marvel movies.
It gets better with
it is so good.
It really does.
The espionage and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, you take that and compare it to, I don't know, Iron Man 2 or 3, which both suck.
Iron Man 2 was good. We're defenders of Iron Man 2 on this, on well, on
not
our
on this show.
Now you've made me mad.
Now we are on this show. We are the defenders on this show as well.
You're supposed to be helping me gang up on
Iron Man 3. Yeah. Iron Man 3 is one of the most popular movies of all time.
Which you is unfortunate because it's not very good.
No, it's Gwyneth Paltrow's abs that sold that movie. And that's...
Hey, that's my one-hit wonder, okay?
What?
Remember, so we had a whole conversation earlier about one-hit wonders. This is a podcast, so you weren't there with us earlier.
They might have been. I've been recording all day.
Oh, well then, please, piece this all together. In a lot of ways, the second and third Iron Man movies are very much coasting off the one-hit wonder that was Iron Man number one.
I would agree.
And it's because people just remember how awesome Robert Downey Jr. was in that first movie.
He was amazing.
And then they
kind
of forgot about Iron Man 2 when Iron Man 3 came out, and they saw it was so much, oh, it's Robert Downey Jr. on the screen again. And then they went and saw Iron Man 3. And Iron Man 3 made, I'm telling you, it was right below
it made
Avengers.
$1 billion.
$1 billion.
It's a lot of money. Okay, but let's go back to Gwyneth Paltrow for a minute.
Okay.
Hot, really hot. She's smoking hot in Iron Man 3. She really is.
Here's my thing with Gwyneth Paltrow. The older she gets, the more alien-like she is.
Maybe so.
And I'm pretty sure she's going to pop up in X-Files as one of the gray aliens with no makeup.
Well, apparently she's really evil on set to work.
Actually, I've heard that. I've heard she's kind of...
Is her face going to split open and goop going to come out?
Okay. No, it's like her eyes keep getting bigger and her face keeps... It's really weird.
Besides her being hot, try and explain to me why Iron Man 3 is a good movie.
It's not a good movie. I can't.
Whoa, okay.
And I don't find her hot. I've never actually found Gwyneth Paltrow to be hot. Yeah, I love her as Pepper Potts. I think she does a great job. And she really works well.
You're about to say Pepper Potts.
Pepper Potts, yeah. I love how she plays off of Robert Downey Jr. I would not want to see her leave that series. I just don't find her attractive, though. Just not...
Yeah, she and Robert Downey Jr. do have a very good chemistry.
Yeah, she's just kind of... But like you said, you say she looks like an alien, physically like an alien, but I find her personality alienating. I like her. I appreciate her in that role, but I just don't feel like
here's
a human warmth coming
off.
Here's
the deal with Iron Man 2. We're going
to
talk about Iron Man 2.
To be specific, though, before this gets into a nasty thing in the comments, which it probably already is by the point they've heard me now speaking, but like Gwyneth Paltrow and other stuff doesn't do a lot for me. In Shakespeare in Love, she did because she was naked. But anyway, in the Iron Man movies, she totally works for me. And again, in the third one, whoa.
So. She's great in 7, too.
Someone else told me that recently.
She's left in the box.
No, don't spoil it.
I think that's going to be I think that's going to be another world tour episode, actually. It's that same line.
You know what's super bizarre? So the internet does strange things to pop culture.
Yeah.
You
exist.
Right? I know. I'm a thing.
You're a thing. It's crazy.
These little snippets of movies become memes, and then then they're just famous from the memes.
Right.
So What's in the Box is an internet meme. What's in the box? Oh, no, that's funny. Go watch 7, you idiots.
No, that's Dick in the Box. It's a Saturday Night Live
skit. Not Dick in the Box. In fact, that's already run its course. I don't even know if people remember
that. Tell me why Iron Man 2 doesn't suck again.
Okay, anyway. The other thing was the Bye Felicia. Nobody knows what the fuck Bye Felicia's from. Anyway.
Nice language. Kid show.
Nobody knows what the flop Bye Felicia is. Freak floppers.
I don't.
Anyway, so Iron Man 2 is one of the better start to finish action movies of the comic book genre. It is, if you go in understanding it's just a fun action movie, it's a blast. And the end fight scene where it's War Machine and Iron Man fighting all of the Crimson Dynamos.
Yeah.
It's so awesome. Just sit down, skip to that part of the movie, and turn your sound system up as loud as it can go and enjoy it because it's freaking awesome.
The Sam Rockwell scenes alone.
And Sam Rockwell is freaking awesome. He's not Justin Hammer. I don't know who he is, but his quote, I'm doing air quote, where it's the internet, so you can't. Justin Hammer is really good in that movie, even though he's not
Justin. So by your definition, that means Jurassic World's a great movie too.
I don't want to talk about Jurassic World. That's probably the worst.
Okay, but
Fantastic Four beat it. No, actually, you know what? I may have disliked Jurassic World worse than Fantastic
Wow,
World.
That's saying a lot.
I absolutely hated Jurassic World.
But again, using your definitions of turning your brain off, going for fun action.
No, you don't have to turn your brain off. You just have to understand what you're going in to see.
Okay, well, Jurassic World,
no,
same thing.
No, there are flat-out uncomfortable...
I'm saying Jurassic Park's not a good world. I'm not defending it.
No parts of Iron Man 2 are in bad taste. I thought there were some sections of Jurassic World that were...
Like when he's drunk, dancing around, and shooting lasers, and then sitting on a donut, and you had to put Nick Fury in there for no again.
That was bad.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that wasn't good.
Yeah.
No, but actually, I didn't have to see, because Iron Man isn't my hero, because I'm not really into drunkards.
Really?
That's not nice.
Did you see the way that your buddy stumbled in here a few minutes ago?
One time martini too many. But actually, because that's not my hero, and I'm not worried about him looking bad, I liked Tony Stark in Iron Man 2. I liked him blasting the watermelons and being a jerk and pissing in his armor and stuff, because this is a guy who's on the verge of death.
That scene too.
This is a guy who's on the verge. He's dying, and he knows he's dying, and as big as his brain is, he can't figure out the problem, and so he's lashing out at the world because of it in his sarcastic way. I thought that was true to his character as portrayed in those movies, and I enjoyed those sequences. So I think the people who hero worship that character didn't like seeing that unpleasant side of Tony Stark that I think is always, or at least always been there in the cinematic universe. And I can understand what he was going through, and I understood why he was acting out the way he was. I just don't think it's another one of those instances where you don't want your hero to act like that. Your hero may act like that, but you don't want to admit that. Yep. You don't want to acknowledge it. And a lot of people who were fans of the first movie and got off on his showiness and his swagger and his attitude didn't like seeing the dark side of that
and personality type. That's something and that's in the comic books too. He goes through periods where even you're like, wow, this is my favorite character, and he's acting like a complete embarrassing asshole in his own comic book.
Well, it's just Robert Downey Jr. doing method acting.
But well, apparently he gets very sensitive apparently when that gets brought up.
He does, but I mean, there's no denying he got cast in that role for a reason.
Absolutely. That's like saying Michael Keaton didn't get cast in Birdman because of his prior experiences. Right. Right? I mean, exactly. It's the same damn thing. Anyway, what Iron Man have you read in the comic books?
I started with around issue 181 when Tony put on, right after the, I missed the whole Demon in a Bottle. I've never read it.
Yeah.
I started right after that when Tony put the armor back on,
mm-hmm.
and then you have two Iron Men running around,
mm-hmm.
and then up to the Silver Centurion, is that what you call it?
So you were on the Denny O'Neill, Kevin McDonald stuff?
I guess. I'm not sure. I don't remember the team. And then I stayed through about 215 or so, and then
David taken back over.
Yep. And then I should have stayed on, because I think that period would have been one of my favorites.
Yeah, it got a little better.
But then I picked back up after Heroes, in Heroes Reborn.
Amazing stuff.
Wait.
I like Heroes Reborn.
Okay, I was going to say, wait a minute, really?
Of the number one issues, I think Iron Man number one is the best, had the best start of any
It was one of Scott Lobdell's better stories, and I love Will Sportacio's art.
Yeah, I mean,
it started out really good.
I didn't hate it, but I liked Iron Man as a character, so I stuck with it. But Heroes Return was incredible, and stuck with Iron Man, good lord, for a long
Buziak.
Through that, and then into the Joey part, which is the Quesada.
Joe Quesada.
His all, and then for years. I don't know. I was probably left in the 50s or the 60s.
So you agree. Iron Man is awesome. All right, cool. I'm glad we can have this podcast and have a chance to talk.
What do you think about Iron Man, Mr. Fixit?
Hola.
Please introduce yourself. This is actually the Fire and Water podcast.
Is it?
Yes, it is.
That's why it's so squeaky.
Yeah, it is why it's clean and squeaky.
I can't curse, right?
You can.
No, don't curse.
Try not to. A fiddlestick sounds so much funnier coming out of your mouth anyway. Golly gosh darn fiddlesticks.
No, freaking. No, you're going to beat him with the freaking mic. Idiot.
What I'd like. You can say frack. What I'd like you to do right now.
Try to talk like Lobo.
Is tell Mac why Iron Man sucks. Because we're not here to be nice to each other. That's the problem.
I like Iron Man. He's like a richer version of Batman.
Okay.
Oh, man. Don't talk. Iron Man is not Batman. And that is.
Totally is.
You may not have just intentionally got me really riled up. You didn't intentionally get me really riled up, but that really freaking riles me up. When people try and say that Tony Stark is in some way some Batman ripoff, because I'm telling you, they could not be. Complete opposites of each other.
They both,
and don't just say because they're rich and have alternate. No,
well, they both.
What?
They don't have powers. They both heavily use technology. One is very scientific. Yep. The other one, I don't know. What would Stark's?
But
he's not a detective. Stark's not a detective.
No, he's
but
not a detective.
Self-made men. You're onto something though. Self-made men. They use their technology to advance their.
What
superhero
mean self-made
active.
Men? They both inherited their money from their rich parents.
Well, I don't mean their money, but I mean their heroic identities. As far as they didn't gain powers from a meteor and all that crap.
Give me $1 billion, I can work out being a superhero too.
Anyway, daddy issues.
Yeah.
Both of them. I'm just saying, dude.
Mommy issues too. Gloria Stark Foundation.
both have a butler, you know, that's famous.
Jarvis, sure.
Yeah. Jarvis and
Jarvis
Alfred.
Jarvis is really more known for the Avengers, though.
Jarvis is more of an Avengers butler.
I'm just saying, bro. I think he's onto something.
Yeah, those are all superficial similarities.
But see, the thing is, Batman is reverted where he's putting on the Iron Man suit, and it seems that Iron Man is going further away from the suit and becoming more nanotechnology. I haven't read Iron Man in a long time, so I don't know. The last time I read was the Extremis, the Warren Ellis
Extremis?
Stuff. Or Extremis. That was the last thing I read. That stuff.
Well, but you make a good point about the gadgets. I mean, less so in modern era, but especially from the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s.
Roller skates.
Was defined by his gadgets. He would always have that the right gadget to solve the problem, which is something Iron Man does oftentimes.
Mm-hmm. Shut up and I'm pointing. I'm shutting up. W. Frank, shut up. And Shag, shut up. And you shut up.
Fiddlesticks,
butt face.
And while you're at it to catch you up, how do you feel about the Martian Manhunter?
Martian, he's the green one.
He's the black man of the DC universe. The truest black man in the DC universe.
Wait a minute. That's why Frank likes Martian Manhunter. It's all part of Frank's agenda. Yes. That's what it is.
You'd have to know Frank for 20 years to know that.
I think an argument could be made that...
Or listen to one podcast.
I feel bad because he's actually... I did read that one episode or issue where... Was it the Martian Manhunter was actually watching over Superman as a child, right? They did an issue like
this. What about this?
You're talking about the John Johnson or something.
Yeah, the John Johnson where he's actually visiting the farm and he's kind of like, let's see if I got to take the kid out now.
Yeah, he's actually kind of... But he's snapping his neck and comes to it. Yeah.
I always thought, that's my Martian Manhunter right there.
Oh, that's not making it into the Fire and Water podcast.
Oh, my
that
God.
That's not making it
into the Fire it's staying in. It's staying in. Look at Frank's eyes. He's like, he's a deer in the headlights. What? No, don't celebrate those parts of Martian Manhunter.
I've seen this look before. The last time I
owned the artwork, dude. The monkey drew. Martian Manhunter is huge, and he's like piling
the last away. Time I saw The last awesome. Time I saw this look was, and it was Fix-It, and it was Diablo Frank, and it was Fix-It said, my Wonder Woman is the one that wants to bang Superman and carries a sword. And you had that exact same look on your face because I thought your head was literally going to split open.
Okay, I do have to catch a plane at some point, so we can't go too long.
Well, that's probably enough for Mr. Fix-It. Let's move on to somebody else.
All right, so I guess it's my turn to take the heat. All right, boys.
Hey, Mr. Fix-It.
We've already got a fire pun because he just said he's going to take the heat. And this is one of the reasons why I freaking hate all these stupid fire characters.
He actually doesn't have fire powers.
The unintentional puns actually.
He doesn't actually have fire powers, I'll point out.
That is true.
Yeah.
The one
it's actually a sticking point with him on that show.
No, that's not true.
Ooh, no. Firestorm does not have fire powers.
He did in the cartoon.
No.
No, it's not. It's like energy, ain't it?
Yeah, he can shoot energy blasts, and he can has atomic restructuring. Like
no, because that was the whole thing. You had Spider-Man, and you had Iceman. And you had Firestorm. And
well,
so you had Iceman.
That was a beautiful setup. That was really well done.
Sick burn. Iceman with the ice and Firestorm with the fire. And her first appearance was in a cartoon instead of a comic book.
Firestar, smoking hot.
Yeah, there you go.
See the fire pun again?
Redhead.
Yeah, that works.
Smoking hot.
Yep. Oh, I got a thing for redheads. I married
blood
a redhead.
Red man.
What was your question, Frank?
Oh, so have you ever heard of Firestorm and do you know what a Firestorm is?
We're taking turns beating on each other.
I am the Firestarter.
Nice.
The Twisted Firestarter? Yeah.
You look a little bit like Drew Barrymore.
Hey,
oh, no. Like Stephen King. Oh, that's a bad one, dude.
So he took it on the chin for Martian Manhunter.
Okay.
He took it on the chin for Batman in a suit of armor. And now, unfortunately, it is my turn for you guys to discuss Firestorm.
Who?
Right. The Star of the Flash.
He's like one step from Aquaman in my world.
Oh!
And we all know where Aquaman's at. So
are you doing that on purpose?
Don't do this. Don't do this.
Are you doing it on purpose?
No, I'm being serious.
Oh, this God.
I don't think Fix-It even knows where he is. You're on an Aquaman and Firestorm podcast.
I know.
Okay.
For real, though. Okay, so for me, Firestorm, I always saw him on comic books. I would never read DC comic books.
He had an overpower card. Remember, he was like one of the double shots.
He didn't actually have a player card. He had like a double shot card.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I think Howard Porter drew it. Yeah.
You guys know the cards from Overpower?
We played Overpower.
We played the shit out of Overpower.
Our friendship was forged over Overpower.
We played Shiznit. The poppycock out of...
Yeah, there you go.
We played all the flim flams and flip flops out of it.
Great googly moogly.
Wow.
We had
I've never met anyone that was over like 12 that played
Overpower.
We had Overpower
tournaments out here and stuff.
It was definitely Magic's special brother.
It's sort of... it explains why we're in your parents' basement, Frank. So
have been the checkers to Magic's chess. It may
That's fair. Shoots and ladders, really.
But
shoots and ladders to chess.
It was the Connect Four of the
collectible card game.
card games.
Yeah.
Oh, I
remember the only thing from Far Side I really remember is Green Lantern, Blackest Night.
Yeah.
I thought he was pretty cool in that. Besides, I have no idea who he is.
Oh, you actually like Deathstorm then? Firestorm was in it for a few minutes, and then he got absorbed inside of Deathstorm, which was like his evil mirror version. It was all black and white and undead and talk like a 90s rocker.
Yeah.
So bizarre.
Yeah, okay.
That's
the version you liked. Wonderful.
I can't think of any other versions.
Did you ever watch the old Superpowers cartoon growing up?
He just nailed it. Yeah, he said Super Friends a minute ago. Yeah, you weren't paying attention.
But, I wasn't. I was really late into that. But did you watch that as a kid? I don't remember you ever talking about Super Friends, though. Dude, the ones with Firestorm in it?
I remember him popping up. It's not like I sat there and studied the freaking episode.
Right.
Yeah, I remember it. I remember them coming on and watching them.
84 and 85, Firestorm was like the star of the Super Friends cartoon. He really was.
So was Firestorm, has he ever been like a JLA? Who is he in the DC Universe? Is he a JLA member?
Absolutely, several times over.
Really?
Yeah.
So I guess
the last.
But he's not one of the Magnificent Seven, right?
No. There was the original era, the Magnificent Seven. Then they had what they call the Satellite Era, which is they had the satellite in space. Mm-hmm. He was the last member to join, also the youngest member. He was sort of them trying to Marvelize the DC Universe.
I could see that.
Jerry Conway, who created Firestorm, he was famous for writing Spider-Man. He tried to create a Marvel character in the DC Universe, and he created Firestorm. So anyway,
you need to give him the shorthand comment. Firestorm is what would have happened if Flash Thompson had gotten the powers instead of Peter Parker. That's always been the pull line for Jerry Conway.
Yeah, the dumb jock.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I got that.
Okay.
Yeah. And then
and Alex Ross considers him the breaking point of the Justice League, where
he doesn't.
It's
the death of Iris Allen that he considers the breaking point, and Firestorm just happens to have joined right afterwards.
But he still paints the heck out of Zatanna. So
she joined two issues before Iris died.
Wow, that's a really
particular
point.
There's a whole lot of splitting hairs there. Anyway, and he's been a member of the Justice League off and on for a long time. So in fact, he's gonna be in the new Justice League action cartoon. So suck it.
Do not ask anyone to suck it. This is a child's podcast.
Right.
Whatever the fuck.
We're having a sausage fest in Frank's parents' basement. I'm just saying.
Catch Predator.
Yep. So
that's why we've invited you over here, Fix It.
Well, I drove by and there's a lot of people just staring.
Well, he owns a gimp mask.
Yeah.
Wow. Too much information.
Yeah.
Well, just to clarify, it's because he wanted to put together a martial law cosplay costume at some point.
Okay.
That's nowhere near as deviant.
Jackass, it was just for Halloween. That is not cosplay. It's Halloween.
No. Halloween's the cosplay holiday.
It is the holiday of cosplay.
And martial law is still a quasi-fascist, near-Nazi figure. So, yeah.
All right. So what I'm taking away from this is that there's no problems with Firestorm because there was nothing mean said. And I think I win. Yeah.
It's just I don't know what to say because I don't know anything
too obscure
about him.
I don't know. It's just too obscure.
I mean, I
get to read some of it.
I will say I totally respect that you've gone as far as you have gone with this character that I probably has made 7 or 8 comic books this entire time.
Miniseries here.
I will spit dime out and do all of Frank's microphones.
He's at least got, 60 years or whatever worth
of
obscure garbage.
He's starting a Batman book for 13 years.
How many issues did you have with your character's name on the cover?
Less than 100, which is the longest the Firestorm's ever made.
30, maybe?
It was about the first, the Ultra series ran around 39 issues, yeah.
Yeah, Firestorm 100, then another 30, then another 20. I think we're doing okay. Yeah.
The thing is it's sort of like the whole Britney Spears thing. Britney Spears is never
gonna
be as well liked.
Who knows? Getting baby hit that one more time.
Actually, I lost my
train. Are you going to shave your head and his with an umbrella?
You actually derailed Frank. Hey. Well done. I think anyone could do that, sir.
Hey, you remember when Britney Spears shaved her head and attacked those press people with an umbrella?
Yeah. What I was going to say is Britney Spears is always going to move a lot more units than Leonard Cohen. But at the end of the day, Britney Spears is just a pop icon. She's the most common, lowest common denominator. Anybody can get sucked into a character that's that obvious, that easy.
You mean like Marshall Manhunter?
Whereas, when you've got somebody who's a little bit more sophisticated, a little bit more nuanced, it's not going to attract a mass audience, but people will remember Leonard Cohen long after Britney Spears as a footnote, a Tiffany style Debbie Gibson type. So not that there's any direct correlation between
Deborah Gibson, thank you,
Firestorm and Deborah Gibson. Yeah.
So who does Firestorm run with in the DC?
Wait, don't he have like a professor or something in his head or something?
Yeah, it's a teenage boy with a grown man inside his head. Yeah, it doesn't sound good. I know.
Whoa.
Yeah, there's so many jokes there, but they're all X-ray.
Kevin Smith already beat you to all of them.
He's behind the times anyway. What it is now, it's teenage boys who find themselves through merging.
Okay, on TV, it's about to be. See, you should. Hey, Frank's agenda. you should get behind this. It's about to be on television. It's going to be an African-American young man with Professor Stein, an older Jewish guy. Okay? Just saying.
A little kinkier, a little bit more of like an ethnic flavor. It's sort of like the dill pickle version of the chips instead of the regular like nacho cheese, but still basically the same thing.
You notice when, but no, it's totally up his alley, but he doesn't want it to be, so he's refusing to
eat.
Exactly. So again, I'm walking away from this pretty scot-free other than you don't know the character. Thanks for being on the show, bitches.
Basically, we all hate our own characters deep down, and we just don't want to admit it.
Frank clearly hates Martian Manhunter.
Well, I mean, okay. I didn't say deep down. He's very, very
right
much
on the surface
the,
there.
Very much on the – he has a podcast devoted to telling us how much he hates his own character.
That's true.
I like Iron Man. Guy, leave Iron Man alone.
Iron Man's – Bruce Wayne Stark is perfectly fine.
Yeah, no, it's Colin Bruce. This is not cool. Batman is a pedophile who lives in a basement. He endangers children and keeps an old man who does his laundry around. That's super duper weird. Tony Stark dates hot chicks in bathing suits.
How about the fact that his enemies are all mentally challenged individuals? They're impaired and disfigured and he beats them up and he locks them away in an insecure facility where they get loose again, so he gets to fight them all over again.
So he gets to beat these mentally disabled people up again and throw them back in jail.
All right, we're taking shots at an easy target. None of us here are on board with Batman, so that's fine.
No, actually, Fix It likes Batman.
Yeah, I like Batman. See, he's my favorite DC character.
When I was like 13, 14, I thought he was awesome. Then I grew up. I'm just saying.
Really? You like the magic man with an old man in his head. It's really creepy. At least Batman. I like Batman because he's a human amongst gods, and they're all scared of him.
That's a pretty cool, insightful thing.
I've always liked
that. Yeah, I've never heard that one a billion fucking times.
In every single
issue of Wizard, I never heard that.
No, I like true, that. Though. He could have come back with the Joker and all this other stuff. Yeah. No, he came back with something psychological. That was cool. I'll give him points for that.
Yeah, except for the part that it's this idealized version. It's like you like to not you specifically. I'm
talking about Bat God.
Is everybody likes to imagine that regardless of what they've got, they can walk into a situation and be the badass of that situation. So there's still a head trip in the mix of that too.
I've always liked Batman more when he fought street crime.
He's in there and he beats the entire Justice League. Then it's kind of BS.
Yeah, when he starts fighting Intergalactic, I mean, it gets goofy. But I just like the fact that Superman and all of them are like, well, you know, at one point they were scared of him because he planned to kill them all if they got out of hand,
which is the thing I hate. And I was agreeing with you, and now I disagree with you again.
Really?
That JLA run was good.
No, but I was about to say that when he was doing I like the pure Denny O'Neil fights crime and fights these twisted psychological. Villains, that's cool. And it's like, but I also like that he can beat up the JLA.
They're all afraid of him.
People
like that about him. I don't.
Oh, you say the other people.
Okay. Like, I watched the first season of Gotham.
I like you again. We're friends.
I did a whole Gotham, just everything Gotham. In the first season, I liked it because it was very cop show. And then I started watching the new episodes coming out. And, oh, man, it's bad, dude. Like, whoever that I guess is the Joker, just chews up the fucking
scene. I've heard it's descended into pure camp now.
It's, I don't know, dude. It's like the villains are goofy, and I like the idea that Batman's world is a crime-ridden, you know, film noir type feel. I like that. So when he fights Superman and stuff, I always thought that was goofy. But it's cool that they're scared of him. I mean, they're scared of a human. You have what? Superman's a god. Wonder Woman's a god. The Flash is a god. Who else? Who the top?
Green Lantern.
Green Lantern's a god.
Don't say that green guy, because he's worthless. Just saying.
Martian Manhunter. Sorry we ruined your podcast, Firestorm guy.
We're going to have to disinfect it after you guys leave the show. So, all right. Well, I would like to thank Diablo Frank, Illegal Machine, and Mr. Fix-It from something that used to be produced called the Marvel Superheroes Podcast. And the whole
Not to mention the Underguides, which covers independent comics, and Rolled Spine, where we're more like this when we just don't care. And we're trying to fake interest in Firestorm, for God's sake. What do you expect from us? We're only human beings. We're not Batman or Tony Stark, for God's sake.
The cartoon was good, for real.
So, all right. Thank you for being on the Fire and Water Podcast. Go back to your little hole. Bye-bye.
Find us on iTunes. And don't forget, Half Price Trades, or whatever our fucking sponsor is.
Unlimited Marvel. We bring them up all the time.
Are you jealous that we've monetized our podcast?
Hey, use a promo code fucking Aqua whatever. And
I'm so sorry.
Flaming Water.
Use promo code Namor.
Steaming douche. Boiling Water.
Boiling water. I'm so sorry that someone pays us to record.
Do you guys? That's freaking badass.
Yeah, we really get money.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow.
I mean, I figured you did.
Is that how you're going to build the Facebook page that anybody could make?
Man, shut up, dude. That's just smart. That means there's no overhead, dude.
No, we're not. This is all. But no, we're going to build a real
site. Stop. Let me stop recording. Well, yeah, we probably should.
Excited for 2016. In fact, I think we should record a promo about all the changes to the Fire and Water Podcast Network happening this year.
What do you think, Rob?
That's a great idea. We can mention the new folks joining the network and all the shows. I can talk about how we'll continue with our Aquaman and Firestorm show, and I want to be sure to plug my movie show, the Film and Water Podcast. What about you, Ryan?
Oh, I think we should definitely record a promo. I'll mention how the Secret Origins podcast is joining the Fire and Water Network, and then I'll introduce my newly relaunched shows, Give Me Those Star Wars and Power of Fishnets, the Black Canary and Zatanna podcast. Sound good to you, Chris?
Absolutely. I'll mention the show I record with my lovely wife, Cindy, Supermates, the husband and wife Geekcast. We should probably also mention the Power Records podcast Rob and I do, too. What about you, Siskoid?
Well, sure. I can talk about my ensemble show, the Lonely Hearts Romance Comics podcast, and my new upcoming shows about the DC Comics crossover event, Invasion, and yes, Oh Hot Moo. Shag, you think we should mention Hero Points, the most occasional DC Heroes role-playing podcast?
Sure, why not? And I can talk about Who's Who, the definitive podcast of the DC Universe, and mention my new upcoming show, Justice League International, Wahaha Podcast. Now, here's what I'm thinking. When we record, I'm fine being the first person talking. I can explain all the changes to the
Wait a minute. Why do you get to start the promo? I'm just as much of a part of this as you are. It was my idea to create the Fire and Water podcast back in 2011. I should start off this promo.
I kind of think it should be one of the new voices who kick off the promo. It'll shock the listener into attention if it's not Rob or Shag.
Cindy and I make up two people in the network, plus, you know, ladies first, so we should be the first people talking on the promo.
Ben, voyons donc. You have
what?
Got
Enough! Stop it. You're like boys with toys. Let's just make this simple. We can tell the folks at home the Fire and Water Podcast Network is growing in 2016. Several new shows are joining the network. We'll have a new dedicated website, a Twitter account, and Facebook page, and folks will be able to subscribe to each individual show or all of them. See, now was that so hard?
Fire and Water Podcast Network, available soon through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Seriously, Shag, you had to get the last word, didn't you?
I wasn't a DC kid, and I only ever bought one issue of Who's Who New. What I bought regularly off the newsstand was the official handbook of the Marvel Universe, Deluxe Edition. While it lacked the artistic flourish and brevity of Who's Who, Ohotmu is inarguably the first, deepest, and most influential comic book periodical encyclopedia. From our earliest days recording on a Radio Shack tape deck-style recorder, wearing the cheapest headsets on the market, I've been trying to realize the desire to produce an Ohotmu show. For half a decade, I tried non-starter ideas on how to execute it. At one point, I researched setting up a toll-free voicemail bot with the intent to have folks call in to crowdsource entry coverage. Mac and Fixit aren't what you'd call dedicated comic book scholars, willing to do heavy research. So on another pass, I thought OhotmuCast might be hosted by the trio of Ryan Daly, Siskoid, and myself. This notion was not actually voiced to Siskoid until after he had already started his own podcast, Ohotmu or Not. That show features a group of neophyte lady friends cheekily rating the datability of the Marvel Universe. I thought Siskoid might still be game for a more straightforward approach on the side, but unsurprisingly, not so much. Ironically, the ultimate incarnation of the idea, October's upcoming The Marvel Handbook, most closely resembles Ryan's much-missed Secret Origins podcast. It will feature different co-hosts for each entry, not the least of whom will be Ryan himself, though other commitments preclude full ongoing co-hosting duties. Presented here is the earliest pass at Ohotmu Cast, with our regular Marvel Superheroes podcast hosts. Here the idea was to do every full-page entry of the earlier, slighter, non-deluxe edition of Marvel Universe in 1 minute or less, with half-page entries given just 30 seconds. As with the first edition of Ohotmu, that meant entries that needed more space were rushed and truncated, while Lesser Lights barely evoked any commentary at all on the spot without research. As you might imagine, it's dreadful. The highlight of the recording is crude bro-y humor, which plays better in the privacy of Fixit's den than as self-incriminating evidence in a social media trial. As a result, most of those got cut in this presentation. I therefore recommend that you stop listening now, or at least soon, if you feel you must torture yourself to see what this would have been like. The Marvel Handbook show will be way better, I promise. Oh, one more thing. A second pass at this book involved the three of us picking which characters we would cover in greater depth with some advanced research. That version didn't even make it through drafting a complete list of who would do what on the first issue. Notably, the artificial time limit premise employed here would turn up later in our Image Comics Spawnometer show.
Welcome to the official handbook of the Marvel Universe number one.
Nope. Podcast.
Podcast. Welcome to the official handbook of the Marvel Universe. Did you almost say fucking wolf whatever again? You motherfucking asshole. Welcome to the official handbook of the Marvel Universe podcast, episode number one. Why are we doing this?
You don't want to introduce us first?
Nope. I'm Illegal Machine. To my right, to my right is...
Take three.
To my right is...
No.
Okay, I'm...
How about, this may help out. Why don't you introduce us first, then do the podcast title?
Oh, translate to that just happened right there.
Hello, I'm a legal machine.
Hello, I'm a legal machine. And with me are my sidekicks, Mr. Fix-It and...
Diablo Frank.
I'm a sidekick.
For the purposes of today, yes. Welcome to the official handbook of the Marvel Universe podcast, episode number one. Why are we doing this?
Why are we doing this, Frank?
Okay, we're doing this because I used to not listen to podcasts, and then these two bloggers, Rob Kelly and Shag Matthews... They
Do it
got
again.
Me. Okay. I never used to listen to podcasts, and then these two bloggers, Rob Kelly and Shag Matthews, they got me listening to the Fire and Water podcast, and I liked it. And then I kept listening to a bunch of other podcasts because they got me infected with the stuff. And they did one podcast in particular called Who's Who, the Official Guide to the DC Universe. And it was the DC Comics Encyclopedic series where they would discuss each of their major characters over the course of their 50-year history, entry by entry. And I liked it, and I thought somebody needed to do a Marvel version. And what I wanted to do is either listen to it or guest star on it where I didn't have to do all the frickin' work involved with editing all that stuff and getting everything together for it. And nobody ever stepped up, so I've decided I'm going to officially rip off the Fire and Water podcast with the Hot Moo podcast. But we're not going to put any effort into this. You know, nowhere near the kind of effort they put into it.
Hot Moo stands for Official Handbook of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, because we didn't just get a whole... So basically, you're going to be our moderator, so I don't have to keep hearing my own voice over and over again on these damn podcasts. And we're going to look at an entry, and we're going to comment on it.
Okay, we're going to look at an entry, and we're going to comment on it, since I'm the moderator. And we're just going to do this shit now. Alphabetical order, because that's the way it goes in the book. All right, so number one, or
by the way, hey, go back and make sure you have the artist, because it's like, here's the Abomination by...
This is the Abomination by Ron Wilson. Thank you, not the moderator. So here we go. This is the Abomination. Classic Abomination. He's got two toes, but 10 fingers. I don't get that.
Mongolian eyes.
He does not.
You cunt.
No.
Okay, the Abomination is your guy. You have to say something about the Abomination.
He's definitely old school with the trunks.
Well, no, I mean, I'm not saying you have to comment on the art. I mean, it's the characters there, too.
Okay,
so you go, character? Oh, yeah, the Abomination, I like that guy. He's cool. You know, however you want to say it.
Okay. Well, I mean, the Abomination, they needed someone to fight the Hulk equal strength. He's interesting. Always been. Wasn't he a scientist as well?
Yeah, and one of Marvel's many commies.
Commies, yes.
So check this out. Under unusual features, it says five fingers and two toes, webbed ears, rigid brow.
We don't see that enough.
No.
Everything's symmetrical with
Very savage dragon, though.
I can see a little bit of that. I could swear that was Gil Kane. And Gil Kane, I think, did some... Astonishing Tales of Astonish. Which one was the Hulk? Anyway, I think
Tales to Astonish is Hulk.
Yeah. Okay, so I think Gil Kane drew some of those, and I think he must have referenced that, because that's some Gil Kane looking stuff there.
Referenced.
And I'm thinking I wouldn't want to be under those armpits. That, I think something would waft from out of...
Hey, okay, so tangent. What's up with no comic book characters having hairy armpits? Weird, right?
Very Metro.
Yes, true.
Very weird.
That's a valid observation, sir.
Kind of looks like a scroll.
Yeah, a little bit. Look like that scroll chin going on, sure. Yeah.
Taking too much time on Abomination. Okay, next we're going to The Absorbing Man by Ron Wilson
Now this one is one of my favorite characters.
I remember this page a lot.
Yeah, I see this one referenced a lot.
Crusher Creed.
Yeah, I think...
great name.
A lot of these pieces are going to be by Ron Wilson or some other guy whose name I forgot because I don't know who he is. But some of them got recycled into the deluxe edition. I'm more familiar with that one. I want to say this was one of the ones that got recycled because it's a damn nice looking piece. He's got
some... Yeah, it is. It looks good.
Serious brow action going on here. Again...
Large forehead.
No armpit hair.
No armpit hair, but forearm hair.
How do we feel about Absorbing
What's
Man?
What's this do? You know what? I think Absorbing Man...
Way underused, dude.
Underused,
I know,
right?
You're a big fan.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
Man.
Yeah, I mean, dude,
well,
you
all
could.
He is just beaten up on, but he's got a pretty badass powers when you think about it, and not a lot of people use those powers. I don't know.
He's one of those guys who's really frustrating because he has those kind of powers where he should be damn near unstoppable.
True.
And that's why you have him go up against guys like Thor and the Hulk. But what happens, and this happens a lot, is a guy like Thor beats him up a lot, so people start thinking that anybody can beat him, and Thor's a fucking god. Absorbing Man should be tearing the shit out of everybody else. It's my Batroc theory, which I'll go into when we come up with Batroc.
Well, we're doing the A's now.
Yeah.
So guess what?
Dude, that'd
be a different episode. Next, this is
You don't have anything more
to add? Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Well, I was going to say, I've always, he's definitely underused. I mean, all you would have, all he would need to do is touch Galactus, and literally he would be Galactus, a miniature Galactus. I always felt.
Didn't that happen?
No, well, in the Earth X books, or the Universe X books, he did touch, what was those demons? It was like a box. The lower body was a box and a demon part.
Oh, you're talking about the Shaper of Worlds?
I think Shaper. Didn't he touch it?
I did not read that series.
I
Alex Ross shouldn't write comic books.
I vaguely remember he. I'm sure. Well, Dan, who's Dan Jurgens wrote that, didn't he?
No, Earth X or Universe X? That was No, that was Alex Ross with Jim Krueger.
Jim Krueger, there you go.
Who also shouldn't write comics.
Well, or Goyer. Take that, Earth X. Okay, next we're doing El Aguila.
Aguila?
El Aguila by Dave Cockrum.
Zorro.
Really? He's fucking Zorro. He's Power Man and Iron Fist Zorro. Not even a particularly good Zorro. I'm glad he got the red in there at least, but he's pretty tacky.
Yeah. What is that on his chest?
He's that guy that...
He looks like Pontiac Trans Am Man.
He's that guy...
Smokey and the Bandit Man.
For decades, they would trot out one guy to be like, hey, look, we do have Latin characters. It's El Aguila. And the entire Latin community would do a facepalm.
And white people would say El Aguila.
Aguila.
I think I had with your Taco Bell.
With your... Yeah, I think you had an El... I'll have an El Aguila crunch wrap.
Okay, here's AIM by Luke McDonald. For some reason, people must, like, the internet hates everything that Luke McDonald did in this issue, because I tried to link to every image possible without having to do my own scans, especially since I've got the black and white essential editions, so my shit's going to be black and white. No one on the internet has this Luke McDonald image of AIM, but it's a guy in a beekeeper suit, so I don't know that we're missing it all that much.
A classic beekeeper suit. So did Luke McDonald have, he had a run on Iron Man?
Oh yeah, he's the one who did most of the stuff with Rhodey.
I have a signed Luke McDonald issue of Iron Man that I picked up at Comic Zone.
Yeah, at the mall.
At the mall in Humble, Texas. There was a long box of Iron Man shit, and there were just tons of issues that Luke McDonald, I don't know if he just sat down at a table and signed a whole run of Iron Man.
He just walked in the shop and just started signing.
Somebody sold their collection of Luke McDonald signed.
Or Luke McDonald sold his collection
of Luke McDonald signed.
Luke McDonald
signed. Times are rough for Luke.
Okay, so that's about as interesting.
Yeah, I saw Luke McDonald in the 90s. I could see that times being that rough. That
where was he working at DigiZone?
No, he was...
Working at Comic Zone.
That's what I was going at. That's where I was in.
Well, that's about as interesting as AIM's ever been.
For $6.25 an hour.
Okay, Ajak by Ron Wilson. Let's check this out. Looks super Kirby. Super Kirby, right?
It's totally Kirby, but the Eternals was Kirby coming back to Marvel and seemingly doing New Gods again, but I don't know because I don't fucking read Eternals. I tried the Neil Gaiman book. Didn't you read that?
No, that one sucked. The one previous to that, the writer Chuck Dixon?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Guess what? Nobody cares anymore. We are switching to Alpha Flight. These are a bunch of John Byrne...
Canadians, eh?
Copy and paste, eh?
No, he might have actually drawn all those heads.
Well, that's what I mean. They're the heads. Classic Puck. I always forget Puck exists until I see Puck.
I really thought that was Wolverine.
Those are 8 heads of Canadians.
Of a bunch of just crap characters.
They do have a Native American.
Didn't Hulk just...
They always have a Native American. Do you realize they just...
Who you call them they?
Them people.
No, they always have one of those people.
Well, I was listening again, ripping off the podcast. Shag does a Hero Points podcast with Siskoid, who's a French Canadian, and he was complaining that every time they do a Canadian hero, it's always a native, like an indigenous person. So it's like all these
indigenous.
Yes, yeah, so you have all these white people in the Commonwealth. Some speak English, some speak French. They never get represented. But hey, let's try out another people from the First Nations who are completely lopsided in the representation.
See, he totally missed the point. They have the first gay character. Northstar.
Well, we're going to save that when we get to Northstar.
But that's the ends. Canadian. That's the ends. Okay, next we're doing Alpha Primitives by Ron Wilson. Loading.
This is from the
nothing.
Humans.
These are...
Yeah, I have no idea what that's from.
I believe that's in the Humans, isn't that?
I'm going to go with your word on that one.
I'm going to assume with that one. And we move on.
Did I mention I hate the Inhumans too? Have no interest in the Inhumans.
It
looked awesome when Jay Lee was drawing them, but that's it. So we're doing American Eagle by Ron Wilson also.
And a Native American.
I
don't remember. Did he ever use... my experience...
Would it be cool, actually? Cap hit him?
He looks cool, but that's super racist, right?
Yeah.
Having a guy run around with the big chieftain headdress.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I remember correctly, this guy was created... the intention was he was going to replace Captain America in a story arc.
What?
Yeah, they were going to...
The original.
Yeah.
They're going to replace a Captain America with an ethnic... person?
Yeah, I think he was going to like run for senator, and he was going to win, and then the American Eagle was going to take it over, and then I think Cap was going to get assassinated, Steve Rogers. All I know is that the headdress is not intended to be shown in full face perspective. You need to turn that a little bit, because it just looks like the back of his head is blowing out into feathers.
It does, yeah.
But do you remember, I don't remember him ever using weapons, though. He looks cool with a crossbow, but I don't remember him actually using
Do you remember that one issue of Captain America where he picked the garbage up off the ground and started crying at the end? Okay, next we're going to Anaconda by Mark Gruenwald.
Serpent Society?
That bitch looks like MODOK.
I'm happy to see a stat woman like that. Like a really
She's a brick.
House. She's mighty.
Just letting it all out.
No. Next, we're doing Angar the Screamer by Brian Postman.
Brian Postman's another guy who draws a lot of these. I assume he was an intern.
He's a hippie. Dude, he's a hippie.
That's gotta be...
He's got some jazz hands going on. He's about ready to break out from...
Dude, look at the
vest.
He's
about to break on through to the other side with that vest and hairdo.
Young man of hair, wild woolly hair.
Here we have Angel.
Oh, man.
Angel.
Gosh. At least when he got the wings, he was kind of cool.
Archangel, he was cool.
I forgot they changed the name to Archangel.
And it doesn't help with the drawing.
Which is lame in itself. Ant-Man by Brian Postman.
And it's...
He's just tiny.
He's teeny tiny. Okay, so Ant-Man will be coming out in his own movie soon.
They should make a movie about this guy.
I know. Big to little.
This is the Scott Lang that I think Bob Layton drew his initial stories, with like Marvel Premiere or something.
That sounds right.
This is actually, of all the different Brian Postman pieces that are in here, I think this is the best looking one. I like that you get to see his power being manifest. One of the reasons why Rob Kelly thought that this would be a bad idea for a podcast is because the guys are just sort of standing there. But this is an instance where he's actually doing something and it looks kind of cool. But Postman really likes doing that whole arms at rib cage and then the wrist
elbows
thrown out.
Elbows at rib cage, forearms out. Yes, he is a fan of that stance. Next, we're doing Aquarian by Mark Gruenwald.
Who drew the Hawkeye miniseries? A lot of people don't remember that.
That is Jesus.
Age of Aquarius.
He's a superstar.
They should have put him under J for Jesus. We're not going to talk about him anymore. Where were we at? Arabian Nights.
Oh my God.
Now, am I the only one who thinks that this looks like Frank Miller drew it, and I'm shocked to hear that Mark Gruenwald is the guy who actually drew this piece?
Frank Miller?
Early Frank Miller, dude.
Early Frank? Okay, maybe early Frank Miller.
Like when Joe Rubenstein was inking him on stuff.
Wait, did he actually have a jewel in the center of his head?
Some of this stuff is offensive to me.
But I like the coloring on that, though. That was a nice job.
It looked like it had been redone.
Yeah, it had been. That was a newer coloring
job. Okay, this is Arcade by Bob Budiansky.
In other words, a Joker ripoff.
No, he's not the Joker.
Dude, he was Marvel's version of Joker.
Is he the Riddler?
He's more like the Riddler.
That he puts the people in the games.
But he does a whole crazy laugh, and I'm insane.
But the whole thing is he's putting people through death traps that are designed to seem like arcade games. That's way more of a Riddler kind of thing, I think.
Actually, he's really good.
He did a good drawing, though, and that was one of the ones that got recycled, because it looks like John Byrne. It looks a hell of a lot like John Byrne.
Right now, they used him to start the Avengers Academy. It was actually pretty interesting with him in it.
Yeah, that's John Byrne. Either that or it's totally...
Maybe he's the colorist?
Inspired by it, quote-unquote. Inspired.
Who's next?
Ares, God of War.
By Paul Smith. And what a fucking ripoff. You get a name artist, great artist, it's a nice piece, and it's this tiny little picture on a half page. It pisses me off.
Is this Ares from the Avengers, Dark Avengers?
He eventually joined the Avengers, yeah. For some reason, they decided... I guess it was a... Michael Avon Oeming, who decided to do that miniseries, and he just made his hair white. I don't know why he did that. I thought red hair looked good, and now it's confusing because when you see the guy with white hair, you're like, is that the same guy? Yeah, it's apparently the same guy.
Ariel.
All right, next we have Ariel, a.k.a. Kitty Pryde, right?
Yeah, and one of her kajillion different code names, and one of the most hideous outfits she ever wore. And she wore some really terrible ones, too.
Yeah, that's super bland. Running out of time. We have, who's this? I almost said Akron, like Ohio, but it's Archon.
He holds him some lightning.
He's got a shield with lightning on it. That's cool. What is this one? Just says Jack Kirby?
Oh, yeah, that's, Arnim Zola. You get Jack. I don't know where this art came from. I don't know if they made it piecemeal. I don't know if they like put together some kind of weird swipe thing, but I can't find this freaking Jack Kirby Arnim Zola drawing anywhere on the internet, so I have to scan it. And I only have it in black and white, I'm afraid, so sorry for that. It's a pretty cool looking piece, though.
Next one is Asgard and the Asgardians. We can do these in one bit. Asgardians are cool, right? So what are they? Okay, you have to give a one-word answer. Aliens or gods? Go.
Aliens.
Gods. Aliens or gods? Gods? I say aliens. So, cut to internet meme of crazy hair guy saying aliens. Next, we have Atlantis and the Atlanteans. Okay,
that's so fine geography.
One word answer. Atlanteans. Care or not care? Go.
Don't care.
Go.
What was the answer again?
Care or not care about the Atlanteans?
Ain't really? Got care?
Don't care.
Don't care. Nobody gives a shit. Except for... No, okay. Attilan by Peter Gillis and Elliot R. Brown.
Another map.
What is Attilan? I don't know what the... I don't even know what
that's the home headquarters of the Inhumans on the moon.
Oh, Attilan. Okay, that's right.
Care or no care?
Atuma by Walt Simonson. Atuma is freaking...
That's a freaking sweet Atuma.
That is pretty badass.
And I like, too, in the entry, he's literally stabbing his own text. That's a guy who's got some anger issues.
Yeah, Atuma's a pretty cool Atlantean.
They recycled that art for the deluxe edition, but they took away his funky, completely non-functional sword.
Aurora by John Byrne.
Oh, dear God. Well, you know, she's got the bipolar disorder, or no, she's a multiple personality disorder. Those kind of characters make me weary.
The Avengers by John Byrne. I remember this entry well. I read it a lot.
Yeah, I think they recycled that.
Because it had the cool one. Avengers identification card on it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's all.
Those are some sweet headshots, but it's just a bunch of headshots.
Avengers Mansion. I think this is a pretty cool entry, right? When we let it load. Oh, it has all the Avengers, tons of people, and that awesome 3D drawing that kind of sinks down into the ground, shows the different levels of it.
Let's be honest, this is no better of a drawing than of Atlan or Atlantis. It's just that we care about the Avengers Mansion.
That's 100% correct. I thought the Quinjet one was pretty cool, right? Didn't it have, like, cutaways? Yeah, it said that cool cutaway.
Oh, nice.
Just unnecessary. It's kind of reminds me of Punisher War Journal stuff, where it's breaks down shit that we don't really care about, but it's kind of cool to look at.
I think it
was it the wardrobe? No, what was the...
Arsenal.
It was Arsenal? Was that what did that? What are we doing?
They would literally show a grenade and describe it.
This is Akon. What?
Those were apparently some guys who fought the Kree. And by the way, Patty, I believe, is Patty Cockrum, Dave Cockrum's wife.
Oh, congrats, you two.
Okay, hold on.
Ask Vargy.
Do you want to do that again?
What the fuck is that?
What's he from?
I don't know. Candy, unfortunately.
Next we have what is that? Acronians? Don't know what that is either.
Hey, no, it looked cool. We bring it up for fucking more than half a second.
I know, dude. I can't even see it.
Man, because we're...
Look. But that looks cool.
Does not
alien,
look cool.
I'm assuming.
No, he's cool. He's like satanic looking and shit. It's cool.
Goodness gracious.
He's going to edit this.
Achilitarians? Fuzzy?
He's another Chewbacca. Fuzzy random alien guy. Alpha Centaurians?
I didn't realize Marvel got that detailed into their alien race. That's kind of good.
So which is the hottest Marvel character?
Iron Man.
Ant-Man. I can't decide between Professor X and Magneto, so both.
Loki.
Is Wolverine Marvel?
What about White Tiger?
What about White Tiger?
Doc Samson.
Doc who?
Star Fox.
That's a video game.
The girls go on a journey to determine every Marvel character's hotness in Ohotmu or Not, the official handbook of the Marvel Universe podcast you didn't know you wanted. Available on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
In 2015, I bought a small portable mixer specifically to record interviews at conventions. It's one thing to have the intent, and another to screw up the courage to ask creators a bunch of questions on mic, at least without completely embarrassing myself. Max specifically was sure I'd never actually do it, but was also the first to congratulate me for seeing it through. While we were taking a break, we recorded an unused filler segment about Houston's biggest annual comic convention. While I'm cleaning out the closet, might as well foist it upon you. You know, it's just that callous cavalier attitude that helped me to nut up instead of shut up.
There's like a Top Cow Productions booth. We're by Top Cow.
Peter David. We're by Peter David.
We're by Peter David.
That's Peter David. Okay, I got an idea where you're at.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right, love you, bye.
Welcome to the Marvel Superheroes Podcast. Ch-ch-ch.
Ka-ka. Okay, take it back.
Ch-ch-ch. Ka-ka.
That's good, actually.
Yeah. Fix it. I feel like a game show host with this microphone because it's so long. Look, if I hold it way down here,
Yeah.
I feel like...
Like Bob Barker on The Price is Right.
Yeah. Bob Barker, pants and shorts. Am I supposed to keep talking?
Yeah, you can.
We're reporting live from Comicpalooza 2015. Right now we're staring at nerds and some unwashed people and probably unsullied, but not by choice.
The unsullied?
The unsullied.
Hey, where are you at?
Comicpalooza 2015, no, Houston, Texas. We just did episode 4.
Of current season.
Yeah, we're almost there.
We're almost there, man.
I think 6 came out last week.
Is it?
So okay. 7 would be this week. So we're catching up.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Marvel Superheroes Podcast. I'm bleeding from my mouth. And with me is...
Diablo Frank.
And...
Mr. Fix-It.
And today we're here at Comicpalooza 2015, Houston, Texas, at the George R. Brown Convention Center.
Yeah.
Yep.
I concur.
And right now, we're just sitting around killing time, so we're going to talk about some random shit. What would you guys like to talk about?
How cool is Peter David?
Wait, what did you do on Friday, Mr. Fixit?
I came to the convention. I came, I saw, I semi-conquered.
What all did you do, though?
Nothing really, dude. Just walked around, checked out the cosplayers. Really nothing. Didn't spend any money. I did kind of fanboy geek out when I met Peter David the first time and got a cool story out of him, which was, you know, he told us a story about his driver's license. If you ever get to see it, it's pretty cool. It's him with an open mouth having this surprise look. And, of course, he's telling this to some other people. He shows us. There's some other riders next to us. And he talks about, they asked him, well, how did you pull that off? And he said, well, back in when he originally did it, they took the picture and they said, you can't do that during a pose. And he said, okay. So he did the pose again and he kept the pose continuously. And they were like, fine. They just took the picture. They just got tired of waiting for him. He said he kept the same pose for a few moments. So they finally just broke down and gave it to him. And all he does is he renews the same picture, because nowadays, with all the federal government, you know, regulation stuff, you couldn't get away with that. So he keeps that same New York driver's license. So that was a cool story, and, you know, he was a really cool guy. But I did geek out. I walked up, and I was with Fryho, and, you know, we walked up, and I was like, you, David, Peter, good man. So a very Hulk moment for me. So that's about it. Me and Fryho just came out, hang out. Fryho spent way more money than he wanted to. I know that, because he kept bringing that up. And that was pretty much it. And then we ran into you and Paquita. Yeah. Dude, I almost slugged you when you walked up behind. You freaked me out.
What did you tell Peter David, though, specifically, when you met him?
I told him he was the reason I read comic books. He was actually genuinely, like, thankful. It was kind of cool. He comes off as a real, real person. Like, he doesn't come off fake or, you know, that show busy feel of, oh, you know, I've seen 1,000 fans, and he kind of does the fanboy pass. He was really like, oh, that's great. You know, he's really appreciative. And I told him, yeah, you know, I read comic for a while, but not until I read stuff he wrote that I realized that the comic was just much more than just artwork. It was a story. And I told him, you're the reason I read comics. I still read reasons. I still read his stuff to this day. Like, if his name's on it, I'll read it. And 9 times out of 10, it's always going to be great stuff. So, yeah. But no, it was cool.
Had fairly Spartan table.
Yeah, that was weird. Like, but it's Peter David. He said that when he gets recognized, he gets recognized. When he doesn't, he doesn't. Because they want the whole point of the driver's license story was they wanted a picture of him, and he wanted to use that. He said he would use that picture if it was any of them. And he says he gets recognized all the time. I mean, when I first walked by him, I didn't, until I saw the name tag. Because the only Peter David picture I can remember is on the back of the old Marvel books, where they would have those little headshots, and he didn't look nothing like that anymore. And so, yeah, I mean, the table was pretty short, but people know. Like, people see him, and I mean, even when we were there, I mean, people walk up and they're constantly asking him for autographs. And he's a really nice, I mean, he doesn't charge anything. He's there for his fans. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is really sweet. I came Friday with Paquita, and it was a rough work week for me, and I'm not feeling great. So I just wasn't very enthusiastic about it. But coming in Saturday, I'm trying not to spend so much money on commissions this year. I don't really have the money to spend. And also, this is the first year where I'm trying to get interviews with writers and actually do something with the writers, because most years I neglect them because I really didn't know what to do with them. And I don't just like want to walk up to somebody and just BS with them just to BS. So so this year we're doing interviews with some of the writers, and I've kind of been focused on that. It's hard for me to get into the idea of getting commissions. But I talked to a few guys. I went and I talked to Mike McCone, and I got a Despro piece by him, which was cool. But while I was talking to him, I never realized he was from London either. It even took me a moment to realize he had an English accent. But while we were talking to him, Walt Simonson came up and chatted for a little bit, so that was kind of cool as well. So probably an hour later, I go and I talk to Simon Bisley, because I was interested in getting a piece, and it ended up not really working out, but he was fun to talk to because he told a crazy story about, like, I think he got talked into giving the finger to a cop here in America, and, like, before he knew it, he was on the ground getting handcuffed, and, like, damn. But he had a lot of respect for police officers. He just got a fresh Captain America tattoo on his arm, and he's still putting the TAO on top of it. So we talked a little bit about that. And then Walt Simonson walked up, and they had a long conversation about the death of Herb Trimpe. Apparently, Simon Bisley was at one of Herb Trimpe's last show. I think he was at his last show. And Trimpe signed this banner that Bisley had. And they were just talking about con stuff and how they didn't see it coming and how he was, you know, he was doing cons right up until the very end. But I was really, and, like, you know, it was another English guy, so it's like I was wondering how many times I was going to walk up to somebody and then Walt Simonson show up and start talking. I kind of feel like, especially with David Letterman retiring, I want to see David Letterman become like Bill Murray, who just wanders up and starts talking to people and doing random stuff. For me, Simonson, he's not doing commissions, and he's been exiled over to the autograph section, which is actually good because he's got a really nice banner and he's high attention. But the problem with that is he's somewhat curmudgeonly. He doesn't really want to have a lot of attention. So I think that's why he kept running away from his booth and talking to random people instead of standing, hanging out over there. I would always see Louise Simonson, but Walt's almost, he's rarely ever at the deal. He talked a little bit too. He's wanting to visit Michael Moorcock while he's in town.
Welcome to Marvel Superhero. Welcome Marvel Superheroes podcast.
Yeah, you said that already.
Hey, I'm here at Comicpalooza, and this is what I do every year. I just take somebody's hand-me-down pass for one day, and I come around and I make fun of people. Like you, all of the shitty Joker cosplayers that are tired of seeing other shitty Joker cosplayers, so you try and mix it up by amalgamizing your shitty Joker with some fucking steampunk bullshit, or fucking Game of Thrones, or some other dumb shit. And, just rest assured, I'm making fun of you, and I hope you're listening to this, and I love you, bye.
Don't forget all the Harley Quinns and Deadpools.
Oh my god, and the Deadpool's the same way too. Oh, well, I saw six over Deadpools last year, so I gotta mix it up this year. So now I'm fucking steampunk Deadpool, or a magician breakdancing Deadpool, or Deadpool with a banana costume on, or something stupid shit like that. And it's unbelievably hilarious to me, but at the same time, makes me sad. But then on the other hand, there are like legit decent cosplayers here too, so props to them.
I was going to say, on the way walking back to our car on Friday, we saw a vehicle that had all these Joker images on it, like from the movies, like a Jack Nicholson, I think, was on there, of course, a Heath Ledger, and I kind of wanted to like just stay at the car and wait for that one steampunk Joker that's been here in the same costume for 5 straight years so we could jump his ass.
Yeah, that's what we do every year. We make fun of that one guy who's steampunk Joker, and it's the lamest shit ever, and he looks freaking terrible. But he's, steampunk Joker, so... keep doing you, steampunk Joker. I love you, miss you. Bye.
He is the steampunk Joker of Comicpalooza. And a few other cons, too. I think I've seen him in other places in the same goddamn costume.
Keep his thoughts alive.
By the way, Simon Bisley said that this was the second largest, physically large convention he's ever been to. He name-dropped Baltimore. He name-dropped Boston, New York Comic-Con. Apparently, we're physically bigger than that. And I think we've got the sore feet to back that up.
I was just distracted. What were we talking about? Simon Bisley said this is a big-ass convention. It is. It's pretty big-ass. It's getting bigger. And there are lots of people with vaporizers here. It freaks me out. And then there are also... like other weird people. But that's cool.
Well, it's like we're sitting around at Doomsday Wrestling since nobody's using it right now for our little podcasting effort.
Shout out to Doomsday Wrestling for giving us a place to set up our podcast, even though they don't know that they did this for us. We're going to shout them out anyway.
And, that's Quidditch going on over there? Or is that some sort of swordplay?
Hey, so they have a laser tag booth set up downstairs, and I guess one of the guys from GWAR who are here doing autographs got tired of being autograph guy with GWAR and decided to go run around in his costume and his thong and play laser tag, and I think he won because everybody got really excited when they announced the winners of his bout.
Yeah, that fellow was wearing quite the provocative costume. He was definitely a couple of guys were talking about some female cosplayer that was running around without any pasties, just nothing but paint, and he was the male equivalent of that. So if the ladies want some cheesecake, look for the GWAR guy. Hey, Mr. Pixie, why don't you talk about Mad Max for a little bit?
I thought we'd do this later on when we could sit down. Because I would really like to watch World Warrior one more time.
So you want to wait?
Yeah, let's wait on that one. Because that one, I really want to pick your brain on that one.
Well, I was kind of beat up yesterday, too. I wasn't as bad as on Friday, but I was still kind of tired on Saturday. So we went to a few different panels.
I had a rough Saturday, too.
Yeah, it's funny. I've spent less money at this Comicpalooza than any of them, probably. I've only gotten one commission so far. I bought a bunch of trades and back issues. It's been nice to just chill and not have a major agenda running around this joint.
Do you think the con has gotten bigger, better?
It's definitely gotten bigger, it's probably overall better, but I'm glad that there's competition coming to town to get a little bit of a variety, because it's... They're a big dog, and they know they're a big dog, and sometimes that shows, so sometimes that kind of grates. I was disappointed, too, because we were walking around the Autograph Alley, never got anywhere near Rosario Dawson to get a look at her. I'm not one of those guys who's going to stand in line, but I really wanted to at least eyeball her. But we did go to the panel with Kobe Smulders, and while that, I'm never going to like Maria Hill as a character, she was very entertaining at the panel. She was quite funny.
Oh, really? Cool. I have not got to see any panels yet.
Yeah, she's just much better at comedy. She was sharp. She, you know, kind of reminded me of Robert Downey Jr. in the way she just bust out those quick quips, and it was entertaining. I was actually going to try to go through some schedule stuff while we were there, and she kept me too entertained. And then also, we went to a Rocky Horror panel, which had Barry Bostwick, Patricia Quinn, and Little Nell Campbell. And they were pretty much bickering with each other the whole time, and Barry Bostwick just seemed exasperated the whole time, but it was amusing. And we also got the tail end of a J.M. DeMatteis panel. I'm going to try to talk to him later in the talk.
The only person from the Rocky Horror Show I would be really interested in listening to is Tim Curry. I bet you got some fucking killer stories.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever going to... I don't think he's a big con guy, though, is he?
Nah, his career ain't there yet. So he's still got a little bit of money coming, I'm assuming.
Nah, I don't think it's that. It's... Hey, somebody playing Careless Whisper?
I mean, you got to figure... This is an easy check. You show up, your fans adore you. They shell out some money for an autograph. I mean... Not bad.
I just don't think Tim Curry's into it, though, because Rosario Dawson's got a bigger career than Tim Curry, and she's here. I never saw Jeremy Renner anywhere, though.
Huh, true. Yeah, that's true.
See, Chloe Bennett was over there. She had a pretty good line. And then, of course, there was the Gotham people.
Oh, yeah, that's... You mean all their fans?
I don't think this is working. It's not working. Yeah. No, it's not that. It's like, I don't think the energy's there.
No. I'm not feeling right now, dude. That's why I told you that. The Mad Max, I really want to...
All right, now the mailbag. Retweet frantic ones include Between the Pages, the Huntress Batgirl podcast, Markeo Moro B17, and Read More Comic. Keepers of the Favorites Flame are Adriano, Blanca, Elintog Ni Silva, Castology Podcast, Coffee and Comics, Daniel French, Fishbonious Sound Design, Dave's Comic Heroes Blog, DeBeish, Dr. G Nerdologist, Dr. Pop Culture BGSU, Eurochild Sugar, Gafgar and the Eternally Unfurnished, Watam Shioran, GK Wordsmith, Gray D. Black, Hot and Nerdy TV Presentation Pilot, Ja Rule, Jennifer DeRoss, Carl Ottersberg, Casper Beaumont, King Dinosaur, Let's Talk Firestorm, The List Game, The Quest Army, Relatively Geeky, Richard G, Slangward Scott, Strongford Stern, Tanishka Vashian, Tim Wilsey 2 Turbo, Tom Beach, and Doug Zawisha. And finally, the Mary Marvel Marching Society, 20th Century Geek, 108 Sage, Dr. Anne, Antonio Machado, Batter Valley, Collected Edition, Derek William Crabb of History of Comics on Film, Dirk Ashton, who added Thanks RSP, Ed DeSam, who sent us a bunch of Sandra Bullock pictures, as is their way, Fanholes Podcast, Firestorm Fan, Gene Hendricks of The Hammer Strikes, Random Geeky Stuff, Green Lantern HG, Gregory Litchfield, who wrote Thanks, I'm Still Marching, and presented a GIF of Captain America from the movie. Into the Weird. I was Joe Crawford, Jeffrey Brown, Just in Time with the J&T Baggers, Justice Trek 2019, Keith G. Baker, Nexus of All, Odell After Dracula, Paul Matthew Carr, Randy Caldwell, Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Richard Field, RV Athletics Fan, Ryan Daly, Secret Wars and Beyond Podcast, Stu Perrin, Tim Price, Tony Scipione, Trekker Talk, and Zach Sally, who added, thank you very much.
Marvel Superheroes Podcast is in no way affiliated with or endorsed by Marvel Entertainment. All characters mentioned and audio clips employed are believed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended against their copyright holders. The views expressed on this podcast are assumed legitimate, truthful, and solely possessed by the speaker.
But anyway, what I was talking about is that the main issue is you have to start a feed, and I like for the different podcasts to have their own different feeds. Marvel Superheroes isn't The Under Guides, isn't Rolled Spine, isn't Idlehead of Diabolu. So the problem is you have to set up that feed, so you have to have a complete episode to upload to start the feed. So the taking the time to get the episode edited correctly and then upload it on, like, say, Friday, so that it would be ready on a Tuesday, for instance, it's tricky to pull that off, because usually I don't have time to edit like
that. What's our Rolled Spine intro?
I'm not sure if it's going to be an intro proper, because I don't think anybody's going to be listening to Rolled Spine that don't already listen to one of the other podcasts anyway, so I don't know if we're going to do like a, you know, Mickey Mouse Club name roll or anything.
We should
like
all
that.
Just harmonize Rolled Spine.
It's not like you have a number of good ideas. That wasn't one of them. Troy. He's had a number of good ideas we have not acted upon because whenever we actually get together, we never review. Because like, I say, hey, what do you guys want to do? And you're like, I don't know, what are we going to do? And then he'll have like, he'll send me tweets with like, hey, let's try to do this. And I'm like, okay. And then I forget what he was telling me we were going to do. And then he doesn't bring it up. And then we never actually do it.
Well, because a lot of my ideas involve you guys bringing shit.
Not usually. Like the whole, like, okay, let's try this for instance. The whole valuable, what was it again? Expensive, valuable.
Valuable comic.
Yeah, I wanted you to bring, no. Well, not even like the most. Well, probably for the first episode. I wanted you to go through your collection and find what the most dollar-wise valuable comic book that you own is. Which could be completely fucking random, right? Two, emotional value. What's the one comic book you don't ever want to lose for whatever reason? And obviously, we would have, if there's some sort of emotional story involved with it, we might have to change a little bit of whatever.
Wait, comic or trade?
A trade is a comic book as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's like thicker. If it's a trade that, you know, if it has to do with a fucking girlfriend or it has to do whatever, then that, you gotta remember that comic book. And that one may not be, maybe you don't own it anymore, I don't know, but there's gotta be one comic book for whatever reason. You want some fucking recap or whatever. And then there was a third point.
Weirdest?
Yeah, and then just the fucking most bizarre ass comic book. How you even got it, maybe you don't even remember, but it's in your collection.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so then from there, we could either just describe our own three, or I would hand my three to you, you hand your three to him, and you know, I whatever. And we would all have different, and we would describe the other person.
Let's just try to do it now off the top of our heads instead of trying to like go in there and research.
Well, I'm actually trying to think right now.
Because if we try to do that, we're never going to get it.
Like, no, actually, my most valuable comic book is either that the first appearance of the Scarecrow, that Tale of Suspense issue that I have. I think I have the first appearance of Kang.
Kang the Conqueror?
I think so.
Okay.
Which is like Avengers. Single digits, I think.
Mm.
Of course,
it's going with the balls,
it's
right?
Dilapidated. It's fucking dilapidated. Yeah. No, it's at the Masters of Evil and the Avengers come at each other.
That's the first appearance of Kang?
Maybe.
I thought Kang was the one where he had the energy balls that was like shielding him from the...
Shit, my own dick. Can't remember now.
Okay.
Or Iron Man number one.
So. You do? The original?
I had two versions of it. I had two copies of Iron Man number one. I sold one of them at Squeeze Blend and got some bills for that. But yeah, I've got Iron Man number one. I remember Iron Man number one came in like the 70s.
Yeah, it was a number of years later. Because he debuted in Tales of Suspense.
So it's still not exactly an easy comic.
He had like 40 or 50 issues in Tales of Suspense before Iron Man
1. Yeah, he went deep before Iron Man number one.
I'm trying to think, what is my most valued comic?
Because like, I know you collect so much fucking obscure shit. I don't know what you have. I have actual value. Like, I don't, because you don't really give a shit about silver, like Golden Age, right? You don't give a shit about
anything. Well, like, I have like the number one Spawn sign by Todd McFarlane, but I don't think that would be worth a lot today. I think I do have some old ass Marvel stuff. I think I have like issue number 73 of X-Men.
Damn, I don't know. Is that
that's
I've got Rogue.
Was that like what Neil Adams period?
I don't remember. I know it's in a.
See, it's kind of tricky because like you had Stranko in the 50s, and then you had Neil Adams in the 60s number wise, and I want to say at some point in the 70s when they went all reprint. So you might either have a valuable comic drawn by Neil Adams, or you might have a book that isn't worth hardly anything because it's a reprint of an earlier comic book.
Like, I've got that Marvel Super Action reprint of Vision's first appearance that I actually used to own.
And Marvel Super Action is not worth...
No,
Marvel Super Action. Yeah, nobody has it. It has no value at all, really.
I have Thanos' first appearance.
Oh, yeah. Iron Man 55, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably up there.
And the block.
What condition, though, is the problem?
I think that's actually a pretty good condition.
Yeah, and see, they have that CGC grading now where it would make a difference, but if
I don't give a shit about that though.
Yeah, but the thing is if you've got it used to be you'd have a comic book grade and the price would be 100% of what they say the value is, and then whatever damage you had would bring it down little by little. But now you have the CGC grading where if it's been CGC graded in any capacity, it's probably going to be more valuable than whatever the old guys would say it was. And if it's a high CGC grade, like 8 or higher, 9 or higher especially, then it can multiply the value by just an obscene number of times. So you'll take a, you know, $80 comic book and it becomes, you know, a multi-$100, if not four-digit comic book, depending on its
desirability. That condition, it's not just the comic itself.
It's that you got one of the ones that's actually...
Now instead of being one of 20,000, you're now one of 10.
Right.
It's all speculative bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some credibility to it.
But. Well, there's always been additional value for prestige collections, like the Mile High collection and shit, because they were... In a particularly desirable circumstances that helped to preserve books that were uncommon or outright ultra rare. So it's always been there, but now it's become more pronounced in this age. Because I think part of it is like shit like eBay, where you can get, you know, lower grade copies of all all kinds of comic books really cheap on eBay.
Yeah.
So to find those ones that are really well preserved and are legitimately very rare in a prized condition, you're going to get some seriously treasure prices on that shit.
Trying to figure out how to do.
And see, that's why this one kind of stings for me a bit, because I never collected on value. I always collected the stuff that I liked.
Yeah, yeah.
But because I was in the comic shop all those years, and my prime collecting years were before I was in the shop, most of the shit that I had that ever had any value has left my hands long ago. And I always took pride in things like I got into Preacher for the first issue because I was already reading Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon on Hellblazer.
That's just pretty valuable.
Yeah, and they're going to do an AMC television series, so it's probably only going to get more valuable.
I have the complete run of Preacher, mm-hmm. the complete run of Garth Ennis' run on Hellblazer,
mm-hmm.
which I think, what is my most, I don't know about that, because I do have some old-ass comics, like old Swamp Thing stuff.
Yeah, and I don't have any, I mean, the shit that I've got that's old is undesirable stuff that nobody wants. Nobody's going to be hounding me for my House of Mysteries featuring the Martian Manhunter. The Patsy Walkers I just recently picked up cheap on eBay. I don't think anybody's going to turn around and buy those off me for an outrageous amount of money.
Those are old, though.
They are old, but old doesn't necessarily mean valuable, especially condition playing into it. I'm trying to think if I ever had a book that was like really valuable. I remember when Cry for Dawn was hot. I had a lot of those early issues at one time.
But yeah, I had like a limited edition, like Darkness number one, when that shit was fuck crazy with Blade and all that stuff.
But I can't think of anything I have now in my possession that has any great potential to be worth anything, or that has ever been worth anything. I collect a lot of stuff that's kind of obscure and undesirable, so I just don't think I have anything that really contributes to the conversation. But I would say, in terms of what I paid versus what it was worth, I would probably point to Preacher, just because I bought that at a discount when I was actually a retailer, and it shot up to like 40 some odd bucks, and it'll probably a high end copy will probably be worth something like $400 if that show ends up coming out and doing well.
So how about just general memorabilia? Like, you have some original art, though, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I tend to get original art commissioned, and usually original art is more valuable if it was published somewhere.
But do you have any pages?
Actually, no. I don't have any comic book pages. Joe does.
I've got a few, too. I've seen the Bob Almond Black Panther stuff.
Yeah.
Well, my collection is like, I have the last three pages of Garth Ennis' run on Demon.
Drawn by John McCrae.
John McCrae. I have, you know, Sylvester X-Men with all the X-Men on the page.
Ron Garney.
See, so that shit's legit.
You've got an original piece of Evan Dorkin Milk and Cheese art, which is apparently very common.
He
drew them for you in store in front of you.
We went to, man, I gotta find that piece too. Make sure it's safe. Went to Bedrock Comics. He was there, and there was a big old line about.
What year was it?
Man, 91, maybe 92. It says on the bottom, and everyone was asking for his autograph. And I said, I don't want your autograph, but can you draw me a Milk and Cheese? Just a little small one so I can put it up. And he looked at the border paper and he goes, all right. So he starts drawing. And it's this huge piece. It says, you know, burn your comics.
It's like, it's wider than 11 by 17. I think it's more squared, but it's nearer to those dimensions.
Yeah, it's all page. And then after that, people are like, he's like, nope, I only do one. Crucial. And people
are
pissed. I actually got to meet, and he was a budding comic book artist at the time. The guy that does, it's a girl comics. I'm losing my voice again.
Shannon Wheeler?
No. The dark haired girl and the blonde haired girl.
Betty and Veronica?
No. It came out.
Laverne Shirley?
No. It's a dark haired girl.
Monica?
I know what you're talking about. Strangers in Paradise.
Strangers in Paradise.
Terry Moore.
I actually met Terry Moore in there. He was actually trying to show his artwork to Eric Dorkin to try to get like some heat. And he had like the first few of those the books done completely. And he's showing them. And Eric Dorkin was really impressed. He's like, man, I really like this. You know, you need to talk to this guy. So we're sitting there. So I actually got to watch him network and watch, what's his name again? The artist? Terry Moore.
Yeah.
Terry Moore was there.
Well, you know he's a Houstonian.
Yeah. Well,
he's still in town. He just doesn't do local shows. I guess he's not into it.
Because I remember people were trying to buy his artwork and he wouldn't sell it to.
Mm-hmm.
But you have some Incredible Hulk stuff?
Yeah, I got Jeff Purvis artwork.
Oh, yeah.
Who else? I got a text here.
Really? You got a text?
Wolverine and Saber Tooth fight, but I don't.
Ooh.
That one I picked up. I got early Doug Monkey.
Oh, yeah. Major Bummer, right?
Major Bummer. 2 pages of Major Bummer. And it's actually 4 pages of villains and the heroes. And then I even bought a page of the Martian Manhunter series that he did.
Yeah. He did the Mars Knees Jockos or, yeah.
Oreos, yeah.
Well, they're supposed to be Oreos, but DC became more conscious of trademark infringement at some point in the 90s. So Oreos became Chocos.
Kevin Nolan's Superman artwork.
You have Kevin Nolan?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know you had any Kevin Nolan art.
Boss.
Yeah, the Superman artwork. Superman fighting somebody, but it's a full page.
You got any Mignola?
Who?
Mike Mignola?
No, but I do have the artist for the Goon.
Oh, Eric Powell.
Eric Powell. Eric Powell inked my Kyle Hotz artwork, and then he drew me a Hulk, his style, the Hulk, mm-hmm. as a thanks for buying my artwork type stuff.
Nice.
And so I have an original Eric Powell, which is probably worth more than the Kevin
Kyle Hotz
stuff.
Yeah. Hotz was doing that Billy the Kid strip with him.
No, this is when they were doing the Joe Fix-It, Paul Jenkins run on Joe Fix-It.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he was inking him.
So Eric Powell wasn't anything back then,
nope,
was
he?
He
was nothing.
He hadn't even done the Goon yet,
yeah,
right?
And the funny thing is, it looks like the Goon.
Yeah.
His Hulk looks like the Goon. I have some Del Keon artwork. With the cool thing about those is on the back, of course, Del Keon drew different characters on the back. Gene Ha, I got some of his artwork.
Yeah, top 10, wasn't it?
No, Oakland or Oakendale.
Octane.
There you
yeah.
go. Octane. And that's actually a double spread. Damn, I didn't realize how much artwork I had.
Yeah, right? Damn. See, that's the thing. If we're talking about original art, most of the stuff I've gotten was commissioned artwork. But the one thing that I've got that I have, I don't think it's anywhere near as valuable as any stuff you've got because it was never actually printed. But I have a piece of Michael Bayer artwork. And my understanding is that it was going to be either the Martian Manhunter's entry for one of those Secret Files and Origins or a cover for a Martian Manhunter book, but it was never actually published. But the inker, Buzz, he sold it to me on eBay, and he had actually sent me an original sketch of Hawkman when they were bringing that character back in JSA that he had done. And one of my most loyal customers was a big Hawkman fan, so I ended up giving that piece of artwork to him. But I still have the Michael Bayer, and it's fully inked. It's definitely, you know, ready for publication. So it's a piece that I probably could never afford to have an artist commission to do something like that. And it's a very nice piece that's somewhat inclusive of his history because it features his deceased wife and child. And it's a shot of him as Detective John Jones on a crime scene. It's cover quality artwork and it's really nice. So that's the most irreplaceable piece of original art that I own.
Well, you bought me that. You gave me a Martian Manhunter page that you picked me up one time where he's a detective.
I got you a page of original Martian Manhunter
when you went to San Diego. I'll show it to you.
Who drew it?
I think you accidentally stole one of his pieces of art.
I just remember you gave it to me. Oh, yeah, I got some Black Panther artwork, too. The Hulk going
Yeah, I've got a Sal Velluto pin up that I got off of the eBays as well. But very nice, though, of him crouched, ready to strike.
I used to have I traded it. Well, I had an Alex Ross sketch.
Mm-hmm.
He had done light sketches of some when they were going to do the EarthX.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to have a website, but he would sell the sketches for like $50. I got that, but I traded it for somebody. I can't remember what I traded it for. I'm trying to think what else, man. I got to go through. I still need to get my...
The Thanos from me?
Yeah.
The Perez? Yeah.
Perez, yeah. So I can put it in my collection. What you got there, Mike?
This was my... So I got this stuff from Bob Altman, right? So...
It was an inker, by the way.
It was inked Sal Velluto on Black Panther. So he sent me like a signed copy of this comic book, but this comic book doesn't contain the page that I bought from him.
So it must have been just sitting on his desk.
Yeah, and then there was like a sketch he did of some chair. So maybe that chair is in here or something? I don't know.
It's Professor X's chair.
Is it?
Yeah, it looks like it.
Is it?
I don't know. I think it's just floating chairs you're calling it. And the page I got was... I don't even know what issue this fuck from.
Well, that is a nifty hover chair, regardless of where it was actually used.
Because the page I got is the one where Black Panther and them are walking through a metal detector and the Hulk walks through it and crushes it.
Yeah, this is from Black Panther, issue 19, page 12 of Tony Stark on the phone.
Yeah, that's nice. Sal Velluto is so underrated. And the art team of Velluto and Bob Altman, especially, I thought was great. I think they went on to do Bloodshot together for Acclaim Comics.
Bloodshot.
You know, the Valiant character when Acclaim bought them and they were Acclaim Comics for a while there. So, yeah.
And that's when they had they're trying to recreate the brand. Yeah,
there was this badass splash page of Iron Man flying in his armor that they did. So he sent me like a scan of that page that he signed also. And I don't know where the hell it is. It should be here this shit, but it's not.
Okay. You're up, right?
Yeah, just tired.
You want to go ahead and cut it for the night?
We can finish what we're doing. You sound tired too.
I'm all right, dude. What is that?
Superman Peace on Earth by Hal Frost.
Yeah, the tabloid format book.
No idea about this.
But is he still popular enough?
His stunt covers still help sell books, but I don't think he's got the cachet that he used to have because he's done too much shit through Dynamite. I think he's got a piece of that company or something, so he did a lot of art for them.
Well, and I would think that the over-photo referencing got super tired after a while.
Yeah. But they say all great artists do that.
Well, and he has his shots, and he recycles his shots over and over again.
Up the nose or whatever.
Yeah.
Because they said that Norman Rockwell used to use photo referencing for a lot of his paintings.
Yeah, it's not so much about the photo referencing. It's that he likes to shoot them from the same angles, and they've always got that same somber, sober quality to them, and the lighting as fairly consistent. And it's like it what was once like completely mind-blowing and original becomes the norm, and you just get used to it, and you get tired of it. So,
there's not a lot of range with Alan Frost. Mm-hmm. It's sort of the same shit over and over. Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't really attach himself to any really good writers.
Yeah, I gotta agree with that, because something he did with Paul Dini was okay, but it was Dini trying to do like Hallmark moments with all the major DC icons, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Shazam, and Justice League. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that forced poignancy is kind of tedious, especially when you know each volume is going to be somewhat similar to the last volume. And then he did a lot of stuff with Jim Kruger, and I just don't think Jim Kruger's a very good writer.
Who wrote Earth X?
Jim Kruger.
Okay, yeah.
Ross.
Does Marvel stand up? We're going to reread Marvel at some point?
We ought to. It's good stuff.
Ooh, let's read the two-parter. Warren Ellis.
Oh, Ruins.
Ruins.
That'd be a good two-part episode. We do one episode of Marvel and one episode of Ruins.
I got Ruins.
I've got Ruins too.
We all got it still.
Yeah, that's...
Ruins only two parts. I thought that was...
It was two-parter. Only two parts.
And I always love saying it.
Marvel's was four. Ruins was two.
But you know the story, don't you, the Ruins? They rewrote the ending.
No, what? How did they rewrite the ending?
I thought you told me this story. Warren Ellis had a real bleak ending, and the artist and Warren Ellis were, I guess, trying to get the last part of the book out, and Marvel was like, no, we can't do that. You already went too far with You Come From This type shit. And so, you remember that, huh? And so
we got a lot of mileage out of You Came From This.
And so when they got to the end, it even feels like super rushed. Like they just rushed it. The artwork's crappy. The artwork, everything about it. If you look at the last like 8 pages.
I wouldn't mind doing the last Avengers story too.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Those are good stories.
I have those too.
Yeah, that there's a story with that one as well. So.
Anyway.
Really? Yeah.
Which is?
Peter David, I don't remember if he had submitted that as a what if or not, but for whatever reason, Marvel didn't want to have anything to do with it. So what he did is he had a column in Comic Buyer's Guide for a number of years called But I Digress. And for a number of weeks, he serialized the Last Avenger story in the But I Digress column. And it gained so much traction from that. So many people loved the story that it pushed Marvel to actually produce the comic book.
That was Ariel Olivetti, right?
Ariel Olivetti drew that one. Was it just him, though, or was it more than one guy? Because Joe over here is talking about how he really hated the rushed artwork on Ruins at the end.
At the end, but it's not him.
But the rushed artwork, what you say is rushed artwork, was Christopher Mahler, who he always paints like that. That's really just how his work looks. I personally like Chris Mahler, and one of the main books I was going to whip out to try to improve your opinion of Wonder Woman was a painted hardcover that Mahler did called JLA A League of One. So it's like, well...
Did he do one of those Zero covers too?
Wait, Mac.
No. I don't think he was in the industry at that point.
Mac, I think you have a low opinion of Wonder Woman.
We might.
Okay. Yeah, a little bit of a low opinion.
I concur.
Yeah. And what was cool about that one too is when I went to San Diego, he was actually showing off pages from that graphic novel while I was there. And I had no reason to think that it was going to be all that great. And having read it, it's like, wow, this is one of the best introductory Wonder Woman stories you could hand somebody. It really makes her look cool, and I really like the artwork. So it's kind of a bummer, because if you don't like Christopher Mahler artwork, then you're probably not going to enjoy that story nearly as much as you could have.
You have to remember, when you read the first
one... Did you read Shadow Empires?
No.
It was a sci-fi series that Mahler wrote and painted for Dark Horse. I think they did two different arcs with it, the short miniseries. And that was another one that was really cool, gritty, intellectual. I think theology came into it. It's been a long time since I've read it, but I remember liking that quite a bit as well.
Well, you see, you have to remember, when you start reading Ruins 1 and get into 2, the artwork,
it feeds
into the feel of the book.
Yeah, and there's a number of artists in that book, too. That wasn't like Alex Ross doing the whole thing she banged. There's at least, half a dozen different people who do different sequences. I think one of the problems is Christopher Mahler did not look anything like any of the other artists. A lot of those guys were painting that in that darker style where there's a lot of shadow, a lot of grays, and all of a sudden at the end, Chris Mahler's like, boom, he used a lot of autumnal colors, a lot lots of oranges and yellows, and it did not look like the rest of the series. So what you perceived as Rush might have just been that strong divergent style.
Well, it definitely went left from there, like I said.
Well, it's still fucking bleak, though. It's not like it ends happily or anything.
Not true, but
So maybe it was bleaker. Maybe everybody fucking got AIDS and their cocks exploded into like cysts and shit.
Whoa!
Oh shit, man.
Well,
I'm just tired.
No, I'm just saying, for it to be bleaker than Ruins was, you have to go pretty fucking far into the.
It's kind of
transgression. What he's saying is, we got to figure out what fucking was. What was it?
Yeah, you need to tell me what this bleaker ending was, because it's already really goddamn.
Bad. Even for the Ruins podcast.
I'll edit some of that stuff into there. I'm gonna have to take all that stuff out of it. This is going to be all kinds of weird hash over here.
One of the more interesting things about Secret Wars was that the big thing that came out of Secret Wars was the black costume Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Right. That was the big thing. So what's amazing, I didn't realize it before in this either, was that was like a fan drawing that someone sent into Marvel Comics, and Jim Shooter found it, and Jim Shooter was like,
okay, hey, save it for the podcast. This is not a Secret Wars podcast.
I just want to make sure I don't forget to put that part
in. This is 2 hours. You need to stop talking. Everybody needs to stop.